Roll call. Sharon, we have everybody here except Mr. Hennigan and Ms. Bonser. And general announcements. I'll go ahead and take this time to give a big hats off to the Dunwoody Chamber of Commerce. Those of you that are up between 5 and 7 in the morning, CBS, Channel 46 was out in the Dunwoody community, and they did a whole expose on Dunwoody during those 2 hours. So it ended up being a fantastic event. The Chamber spearheaded it as far as pulling everybody together, and I think it was a great piece for Dunwoody. So those of you Chamber folks that are here, thank you very much, and nice job. With that, Council, I'm gonna pass to you guys when we get down to Mayor and Council comments, and we'll start with the invocation. Mr. Ross, would you please do us the pleasure?
At this Council meeting, help us to make decisions which keep us faithful to our mission and reflect our values. Give us strength to hold to our purpose, wisdom to guide us, and a keen perception to lead us. And above all, keep us charitable as we deliberate. Amen.
Amen. All right, Danny, would you please lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Let me finish off that general announcement. I'd be remiss to say that thank you for Councilman Shortle and Councilman Ross for getting out there at 5 in the morning. I was a little bit late. I was doing, most folks don't know, I have a weekly staff marathon at 4:30 Thursday morning, so I was a little bit late to that 5 o'clock. And Denny thankfully gave me a cell phone call to let me know I was running a bit late. So thank you, General, for that. All right, moving on. We will move on to public comment. And these are all the cards, and I will call them. Okay.
Do we have to approve the meeting agenda?
Oh, I'm sorry, guys. Approval of meeting agenda. Any comments on that? Any additional information? All right, with no objection, then we'll move forward with this agenda. All right, now to the public comment. Mr. Callahan.
Good evening. Thanks for the opportunity. I'm here tonight to oppose the amendment that would allow non-Dunwoody residents to serve on committees. However, I do suggest that you do amend the ordinance, but amend it so that council members cannot appoint themselves or a spouse. I think this change in the ordinance will help relieve possible conflicts of interest in future city business. Many people worked hard for the city to make it a reality. Now, this proposal, I think, opening the doors to residents of Fulton, South DeKalb, and other areas of Atlanta to serve on these committees would not be in the best interest of the homeowners. I think Dunwoody's full of qualified people from various professions. I think there's a wide market of people out there that would be willing to serve. I also understand, as a business owner myself, why you want people to from the taxpayer side to be on the committees. But I think we'd better serve if the homeowners, the residents, were on the committee, and we'd encourage local businesses to present to these committees their professional opinions, whether it's hotels or sustainability or other interests they may have. But I ask that you consider that amendment wisely. I think it's, I know the people that are non-residents now that have been appointed are probably great people. I'm sure I know a couple of them, but I think that this change is long-lasting. And I'd hate to see the all these committees be taken, not necessarily taken over, but overrepresented with non-residents of Dunwoody.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan. Bill Robinson.
Bill Robinson, 4731 Hollyoak Place. Mr. Mayor, Council. I heard a rumor, so forgive me if it's not true, that the city of Dunwoody may apply for stimulus funds. I applaud that if we spend the money on things, asphalt, desks, things that we would have to spend our own money on later. I would strongly suggest we not use it to increase staff of any kind, whether it be city staff, police, you name it. Because 2 years from now, if we add bodies, we got to pick up the money or the tab for that when it's over. So I think that would be short-sighted and foolish, to be frank. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Robinson. Thomas Schneider.
First time I've done this, so bear with me if you could. I was driving down Mount Vernon Highway the other day, and what really hit my eye is the pollution we're starting to have from signage, mainly real estate signs, yard signs, signs for roofers. It's really gotten to the point that on every corner there's 4 and 5 signs now. They are really detrimental to the appearance of the streets. They don't solve any, serve a purpose in it at all. If you have 5 real estate agents advertising houses, first of all, probably nobody even reads them. I came from a community in New York, and I have a home in South Georgia where they have very strict rules and covenants on the signage that is allowed. My homes in New York, the community I came from, they allowed no signs at all. You could not put a sign up at all. If you wanted to find out about the purchase of a home, you had to go to the real estate agents, or there would be advertisements in the local newspaper, a la the Crier. The home in South Georgia, in St. Mary's, allows only a small sign, probably half the size of the desk you're sitting on. It has for sale the name of the broker and the phone number, and that's it. It is not a gaudy sign. It is usually a very subdued color, such as a brown on black or green on blue or something like that. So it blends in with the house. It is also parallel to the face of the house so that it's not sitting on the road and it sits back considerably from the roadway itself. So I think that we could do something to improve not only the corners of every street that we have literally in my subdivision or any other subdivision in Dunwoody, but also the street corners that we drive down on an everyday basis. Again, go down Mount Vernon Road and you'll see what I'm talking about. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schneider. Bill McCann.
Thank you. Good evening. I am Bill McCann. I'm here on behalf of Dunwoody Preservation Trust. I'm on the board of directors and also the vice president of development. And I'm here to comment on council's discussion item tonight that it deals with the potential of having a large arts and crafts festival in Dunwoody. And I'm not here to take a position on the merits, good or bad, of the festival, but I am here to comment on the potential date at which I understand it might be scheduled, which I understand is potentially the second weekend in May. And as all of you know, Dunwoody Preservation Trust has its annual fundraiser, Lemonade Days, in the spring. This is a community-wide, and actually now it's far beyond community-wide event. Very family-oriented, and it's grown every year. And we have worked at creating community awareness and expectation of this event, because we schedule it every year on the third weekend in April, and every year at Brookrun Park. And we've done this for 8 or 9 years now, just to build up a consistency of, if you will, brand awareness. We plan, promote, and manage this event entirely with volunteers that reflect the great spirit of giving back that pervades this community. The revenue we raise through Lemonade Days is used for various activities that focus on preserving the history and heritage of Dunwoody. The list of accomplishments of DPD in these pursuits is significant, and I've made a copy of this, and I'll turn it over to the secretary for you to have, just as a matter of background for any further discussion. Significant to the economic success of something like Lemonade Days is sponsorship. And we market to companies that have a presence in Dunwoody and a reason to want to promote themselves in the Dunwoody community. And since sponsorships really are not weather dependent, you get them ahead of time, they really end up constituting 60% to 80% of the revenue that you get from this type of event. 60% if the weather is good and a lot of people come and do rides and eat food. 80% of the weather is not too good and the crowd's lower. Sponsorship is more of a constant factor. So it's very, very important. And it's our feeling to to have another major event so proximate to Lemonade Days that is sponsor-driven, and I assume the Arts and Crafts Festival would be. I looked at the Norcross Arts and Crafts Festival, and they had 31 sponsors in 2008, so I guess it's a fairly much a sponsor-driven thing. But to have this within 3 weeks of Lemonade Days, I think potentially compromises both the marketing and possibly the pricing sponsorships. And not only for Lemonade Days, but it might also have an adverse effect on the Arts and Crafts Festival itself. So what I'm really saying all this is by way of saying, the Arts and Crafts Festival may be very appropriate for Dunwoody, but on behalf of Dunwoody Preservation Trust, I request that it be held sometime later in the year, preferably the fall, because I really believe that would be beneficial in terms of revenue development for both parties. And as I say, for us, we from Dunwoody Preservation Trust, this revenue is extremely important to invest in the community. And as I said, the list of events or activities that have taken place over the years using these funds, which right now, by the way, one of the major ones is some major renovation of the farmhouse in the range of $75,000 to $85,000 to take care of some repairs and also make it more usable. These are what we use the funds for, putting them right back in the community. So I think we have to be cautious of getting too many events too proximate to each other to have a high dependency on sponsorships. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Mr. McCann. Barbara Robinson.
Mayor, City Council, and staff, thank you for letting me speak to you today. And I, like Bill McCann, am speaking in regard to pretty much scheduling of events. I am speaking as an executive board member of the Dunwoody Women's Club, the Sproul for the Arts, Center for the Arts Guild, and the Dunwoody Preservation Trust. I appeal to you that you look at the economics of the events, consider the timing and the scheduling of the events, and how it will conflict with the success of current events. And also, I want you to consider the benefit to the city itself when you're looking at scheduling these events. The organizations who have supported Dunwoody and the community and helped it become the successful city that it is appear to have been overlooked or bypassed by the city and council in scheduling. We need a community calendar so that we can work together in the support of volunteer organizations and what the city plans to do. And those of you who are present tonight that supported the Dunwoody Nature Center Garden Tour, thank you very much. The Butterfly Festival is June the 27th. And by the way, in case you don't know it, the Dunwoody Nature Center was started by four women from the Dunwoody Women's Club who went to the county and appealed for the property. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Robinson. Bob Dallas.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council. I'm here to speak about two things. One is the Arts Festival, and secondly, the CDB, and they kind of relate to each other. The Arts Festival, let me just say, I think is a good idea. It's an idea that many of us have been talking about for a long time. For me, about 12 years ago, when I was president of the Sproul Center for the Arts, the concept came up, and there's a lot of work that goes into an Arts Festival. I certainly think Dunwoody is a place uniquely poised to benefit from that. But importantly, though, we have so many community organizations that are involved with the arts that I hope that they are heavily engaged, the Sproul Center for the Arts, the Fine Arts Guild, as well as the Sproul Guild, and other groups that are here, which I think could help facilitate that. You always need a champion for that, so I applaud that somebody's coming out as a champion. But to the second part, and that is, you know, the funding of something like that. I believe it's critical and very important that in making decisions of how the hotel motel tax dollars are utilized, that it's used through the proper process. Now, you know, certainly you have within your authority to dictate how it gets used, but I would urge you to consider developing the process first before the money is spent to make sure that it's done properly, because this isn't the only request that money will get asked to be used for. There'll be many that will come down the pike, believe you me. I mean, when money's available, projects seem to find a way for it. And I just suggest to you that taking the time to do that, not too much time, but to do that would probably be a good thing, and we can achieve the objective of having an arts festival at the right time with the right folks involved with it, so that it does become what I believe to be probably one of the best in Metro Atlanta, because my observation, Metro Atlanta hasn't had enough good ones, and I think Dunwoody and some of the assets that are bringing brought to bear here will facilitate that. Secondly, with the CVB, just in general, I want to say thank you for allowing many folks to get involved with that discussion. I know it's a complicated issue. I wish I could say there was one correct answer. There's not. I think there's a best answer. And as you know, and we'll hear more conversation on it in a few minutes, and that is the C6 model. But I just want to say that in that discussion, you know, there are going to be examples given and processes and thoughts as to what the best one should be. Look at them just from, you know, helping you to make a decision as to what the pluses and minuses are. Certainly in making decisions, we all wish it was always plus. It's rarely the case, and this is one of those. And I know we have some folks here from the Georgia Hotel and Lodging Association, Jim Sprouse. We also have Spurgeon Richardson, who many of you know through the ACVB, the Atlantic Convention and Visitors Bureau, kind of like the guru of all this stuff, that hopefully will help us make a good decision for us in Dunwoody. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dowd. Max Lehman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Council, staff. Appreciate this opportunity to speak. I believe more effective means of public zoning notice are needed to in Dunwoody to maximize the community's awareness of land use and development changes. This fact speaks directly to why many people voted for a city of Dunwoody, that is the mandate of more control of local development. If you can't see it, you can't measure it. You can't measure it, you can't manage it. I suggest four methods governing authorities all over use to help maximize public awareness of zoning changes. Implementing these methods may require text amendments to our current zoning ordinances. Currently, zoning in Dunwoody is following the exact letter of the law. In my opinion, the spirit of the law is being violated. The intent behind public zoning notification is to alert folks of material changes closest of land use closest to their home. These changes are typically permanent, and over time, they may affect the entire nature of the affected area. Thus, these changes should not be made lightly, especially without a comprehensive land use plan in effect. As we know, we don't have one yet. Dunwoody currently provides zoning change notification with a small ad in the legal organ, the Dunwoody Crier. As well, a small sign is placed on the location. Specifically, on the Winters Chapel Road project, Dunwoody followed exactly the letter of the law. In this case, the crier was notified and a small sign was placed on the location. Yet, the residents of four neighborhoods representing over 500 people had absolutely no knowledge of this development coming to their neighborhood prior to the Zoning Board of Appeals meeting last week. I think that's unacceptable. Granted, some folks knew about the project, that's true, but not those closest to it. Thus, in my opinion, the spirit of the law was violated. The spirit of the law is to inform. These facts run contrary to the mandate of better local control of development. I'm pleased that Councilman Hennigan recognized meeting the letter of the law for zoning notification is in fact inadequate, and it does not fulfill the intention of the ordinance. I'm encouraged that a few city council members may appreciate this ineffective process and it must be changed. Here are four easy resolves. One, online notices to the crier. Very simple, the crier can post the notices, people can check it online, a history can be kept. It's a very progressive thing to do, it won't cost anything. The community council findings should be published. Their recommendations ought to be available to the public. This is currently the case in DeKalb County. In Lawrenceville, residents who live within 1,000 feet of a proposed change in zoning are notified by mail. Larger zoning change signs must be readable within 15 feet so that you can see it from your car in rain and read it. You should be able to read the proposed change from one use to another, the case number, the date of the hearing, and so forth. This is the de jure standard that's currently being used in DeKalb County now. The current notification methods are unacceptable for our progressive city, in my opinion, and why should we have less? I have a statement that I'd like to read at the end of this meeting due to family constraints. I ask the indulgence of the mayor and the council and staff to let me continue for exactly another 90 seconds.
90 seconds, you got it.
Thank you, sir. To Mr. Lunston's credit, he has offered as a DHA representative to come to my neighborhood. Our neighborhood is DeKalb Highlands. We have had a continuously running social organization for 41 years. And we were unaware of this project. And Mr. Hennigan, Mr. Lundston indicated that he would come to our next meeting to be with us to explain a little bit about how this all came about. So I'm encouraged by that. Mr. Bill Grant is here, and he is a great actor, done a lot for this city, an excellent, responsible developer. So Bill, in no way is this reflected toward you, sir. This council must not consider the reduction of stream buffers to 25 feet without a comprehensive land use plan in effect. It's the cart leading the horse. If you do it that way, you're going backwards with it. It's counterintuitive to good development. It's counterintuitive to good land use. I appreciate your indulgence in my overtime. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Angela Thomas Zaleski.
Staff, thank you for allowing me to speak as well. I may be jumping again, but I had contacted Mr. Hennigan last week regarding the ability to request to adopt an island here in Dunwoody. I'm a real estate agent at the Coldwell Banker office right here in Dunwoody, and I've always kind of had a passion about getting that island at Shallowford and Chambly Dunwoody beautified. It's always just been kind of a patch of weeds, and I drop by there all the time, and I would just... I was asking how I could request the permission to go ahead and do that, and I think I might have jumped the gun because tonight there's a doctor's spot, and I'm sure that's what that has to do with, so I'm sure you'll be making us all aware of how to go about that, but in that case, I would just like to say that I'm sure you'll have something regarding just drought-tolerant plantings that are low in profile, plantings that are in keeping with the other islands that have already been adopted, such as the one at Tilly Mill and North Peachtree, and Mr. Grant, he does an amazing job with his island that he's taking care of out of the kindness of his heart. Maybe submit drawings as far as what people plan to do, and I'm sure you have something in place, but I was just hoping that could be my island, and I know there's probably going to be a selection process, but I just came here to ask for consideration. Thank you very much.
Thank you. With that was our last public comment card for the beginning of this meeting. And now I'll move to the council comment, and I'll start down.
I'm good.
Mr. Ross.
I have a couple of comments. First of all, I'd like to thank Councilman Shortle for getting out this morning and helping clean up the post office area. The farmer's market will open tomorrow, Wednesday morning at 8 o'clock at the post office location. Located just adjacent to the Dunwoody Village Post Office. I see a couple of other workers back there, and I appreciate your help as well. I'd like to just make a statement. This seemed to be a time when I'm losing a lot of my friends, but my good friend Ira Archer, who was 95 years old, and I've known him for 35 years, passed away yesterday. He was a good man. He was a guy that I admired a lot. He was a small version who's the comedian of Jack Lemmon, and a couple of people. He was a good man, and I just wanted to say we're going to miss him.
Thank you, Mr. Roth.
I got a couple free things. Number one, last Thursday night I had a void filled in my educational background. I never attended kindergarten. I was a speaker at Penrose kindergarten graduation, and I was given an honorary kindergarten degree. So.
One for one.
The farmer's market, again, I want to thank Danny for doing a lot of work on the talking to the post office folks, and Patty and Mary from the Sustainability Committee, and I don't know if anybody's here from the Dunwoody Volunteer Coordination Committee, but Bill Tobin out there this morning and brought his neighbor, and if you haven't been down there lately, first of all, I've never driven down there in my life, and this morning I realized it was like Lincoln Highway, but it really has cleaned up, and I think you're going to be proud of it. I think it was the right decision that we went that way. And on that, I just want to key off of the last thing to the council members is that, you know, one of the things we were told when we started this thing, remember what you said to the people. And I think that's very, very important that we do that. And that, you know, that we not jump off and just go down any kind of road that we see there that may be a populous road or anything else. But everybody knows the number one issue here is zoning. And, you know, although I know it won't go 100%, you know, the main factor in zoning was owner-occupied homes. And make no doubt about it, we took a poll. It was the number one issue at the voters. Number two is taxes, you know. And that is the idea that we be good stewards of our taxpayers' dollars. And I think, you know, it would be great for all of us to be able to have an unlimited budget and be able to do everything everybody wants, but at times we're going to have to make some hard decisions. And there is an unlimited amount of money here for us. Police, I think the police have done well. Now, instead of saying, by the way, Shorely, you don't have enough police, now I'm getting, by the way, Shorely, you have too many police. But the last couple items that are going to be hard for us, and I think that's very key, are going to be the parks. Nobody can be more disappointed in where we are in the parks than I am. You know, I'm back up to a couple of them right over here. And this is the other one that we're in degradation. How are we going to do that? It'll take a max effort, but not only all of us, but our citizens, all of our elected officials and everything, because without, I think, legislative action, I doubt seriously that we're going to see that fall go down the track very fast. And with that,
thank you, Mr. Shore.
I had the pleasure today of hosting, along with the mayor and several other people with St. Warren and Lieutenant Flatter from the police department, a delegation from the government of the Republic of Georgia, the former Soviet Republic. They were over here through Friendship Force, and they wanted to come talk to us basically about the public-private partnership aspect of the way we provide services. They were a former Soviet Republic, and in 91 went straight to capitalism and kept all the bureaucrats on board. And they essentially had a central government that rules from Tbilisi, the capital, and the further you get from there, the less services you get. So they're looking at establishing some municipalities here. So we had a presentation from Oliver Porter from Sandy Springs, the mayor, myself, and several other folks today, including handcuffing one of them for a picture that they wanted to put next to a police car. But the spokesman for the Foreign Ministry of Georgia presented the mayor. Her name is Nino Kajaya, which sounds kind of like a sneeze, I think. But presented the mayor with a plaque of Central Tbilisi as a gift from them to the city of Dunwoody. And made a great visit to them.
Thank you, Tom.
This will be up in my office at City Hall for anybody that wants to come by and take a close gander at it. Very, very nice of them. And I'll end up, guys, on a general comment. I'll throw this to Warren. But Warren, during public comment, we heard from Mr. Schneider on the illegal signs, and I just asked that you direct staff to do a sweep. And just for clarification for everybody, those signs are illegal. They're in the right of way. There's no doubt about it. So we just need to get a little sweep going and stay a little bit more on top of that particular issue. So with that, we will move on to discussion topics and Dunwoody Arts Festival presentation.
Mayor and Council, I just wanted to provide you a very brief overview tonight of this festival. I was approached by Francis Shubi, who is the organizer of the Norcross Arts Festival. As you know, I used to serve as the city manager for the city of Norcross about doing a festival in Dunwoody. And I was very impressed with the festival that we had in Norcross. So we've engaged in some preliminary discussions regarding an arts festival for the city of Dunwoody. Some suggestions tonight, and I'll let Francis give you the particulars of those. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Francis Shubi, and I live at 2129 Front Royal Court. I'm a resident of Dunwoody for 19 years, And I wanted to just say that Cindy and I, Cindy Flynn, who is down there, are thrilled to have the chance to bring an art festival to the streets. And it is the streets of Dunwoody. And what we are looking to do is to have an art festival that will draw thousands of visitors to Dunwoody and will promote fine art, food, and family entertainment. The purpose of the art festival will be to actually showcase the city of Dunwoody and to highlight the local businesses, the restaurants, the retailers, the hoteliers, anybody who would like to promote themselves, because this is a city event promoting Dunwoody. We also, as an organizer of a festival for 6 years in Norcross and the Atlanta Jewish Festival on Tully Mill for 2 years and an artist for 12 years doing shows, I find that with art festivals, the fun thing to do is to let as many civic organizations be a part of it as well, because it is a community event. So Dunwoody Preservation Trust, Sproul, we've talked to Dunwoody Arts League, which is Dunwoody High School, talking to the new elementary school. We want as many of these civic groups and organizations to be part of it, to actually be there the weekend of the event. We are looking to create a community event that will help build a strong community spirit so that people who live in Dunwoody will say, wow, we've got this great art festival. Come, everybody. Come to see us. Come to see our fabulous restaurants, stores, shops, and amazing people who live here. We are not a carnival. We are not a competitor of Lemonade Days. And as someone who's been in this business for a long time and actually a volunteer for years and years with this, there are only 6 good weekends in the spring and about 6 good weekends in the fall. And as cities become cities, everyone is going to congregate for the same weekend spots. You don't have a lot. And 3 weeks after a major, fabulous, wonderful event is considered an eternity in the art festival business. Most artists are thrilled just to have one to go to every week, but to have one 3 weeks later is in our business, a lot of time. We have looked at several locations, and thanks to the Crier and their support and guidance, and thanks to the Chamber of Commerce and their support and guidance, we have chosen the area on Shamley-Dunwoody Road to actually block off the streets on Shamley-Dunwoody Road from the gas station to Dunwoody Village Parkway so that the gas station would have access to and from. And everybody else, all the businesses, will actually benefit that weekend because you can get through to all of them from either Mount Vernon or Dunwoody Village Parkway. And we're not wanting to hurt them. We are wanting to help them. So we are going to bring thousands of people to an area to allow these businesses, they can come out of their shops, they can show off their restaurants, they can do food demonstrations, they can do whatever they want to showcase this wonderful area that we've got of Dunwoody. Even the Chamber of Commerce would even be a welcome center for our sponsors, for our artists with that wonderful train building that you have. It would just be the perfect spot for a welcome center. Why this location? Well, the location is the most charming, desirable location. It showcases the village and all the character. We have looked at other streets. We looked at Dunwoody Village Parkway, which would actually cut off some businesses in the back. We've looked at places behind Perimeter Mall, and that's exactly what it is. It's behind the mall. So we want to showcase the best that we've got. And that area is clean. It's beautiful. It's a straight shot. It would be easy for the artists and the sponsors to unload. It would be easy for visitors and neighbors alike to walk up and down the street and see how wonderful our city is. It would be great visibility to the thousands of commuters. We know that the businesses will be highlighted there because we've done this for years. Norcross kids me that they wish I would do this every weekend, although it takes me a year to pull this off. The hotels, we would invite all the hotels to be a part of this. That's what we do in Norcross, and they get to showcase. They actually have tents there, their own booths, and they get to tell about their services. They get to show off what their convention availability is. We even had some of them do chocolate fountains, chocolate waffles, different things, all amazing things that these hotels can do to make sure that they are a part of this, to help their tourism and help their visibility. There's also an amazing amount of parking for the artists. And when I say artists, I'm talking about 120 to 130 artists from all over the country. We do have local artists. And when I say we, I've been called a Pied Piper of artists. I've been doing it so long and that I was an artist for 12 years that this would be just a perfect opportunity and what a great venue for them. I don't think the businesses will be adversely affected at all. I think they will be thanking us, please do it more and more, because it just brings people right to their door. I also think it would be great to show off the Chamber of Commerce, because it's right smack there in the front of it. It would also show off the farmhouse. The big question seems to be, why Mother's Day? Well, there are lots of reasons why Mother's Day. The first reason is, as an artist myself and as a representative of artists, because that's what this is and why we call it an art festival, it's not a craft show, it is an art festival, a fine art show, a juried fine art show. I happen to know, just because I've been doing this so long, when the other shows are, not only locally, but nationally and regionally. And the bulk of the art shows that I would be drawing from are around the Southeast, are heavy in October and November. So I would lose about 60 to 70% of the artists that I hope to bring to Dunwoody to show off for Dunwoody, for their visitors and their neighbors. We looked at Mother's Day because Mother's Day is the perfect weekend for families. You know, they have lemonade days, they're all geared up. I'd love for them to see, this is a community that has great events. We don't just have one in the spring. We have lots for you in the spring. There's also lots of fall events that are, Marist has a wonderful arts and crafts show in the fall. Sometimes it's in October, sometimes it's in November, depending on their football schedule. So I would hate to compete with that in any way. That's extremely important to the community, as well as here, the Dunwoody Church that we're sitting on always has theirs the first weekend in November. So that's another huge city. Even though it's not run by the city, it's still important to this community and draws thousands of people here. So we kept going back to this Mother's Day. There is a festival in Roswell. It is the most crowded on Sunday because people go to a brunch or they go to dinner with their mothers and their families, and they're all looking for something wonderful and fun to do. And what a better thing to do than to go to an art festival. We will have live entertainment for 2 days on a stage. We will have food vendors. We will have sponsors. We will have civic groups. We will have kids' activities that tend to be more on the creative end, more arts and crafts that Sproul will host. We will have train rides. We will have a science museum, a bubble man, more creative things. This is not a carnival in any way and would not compete, in my opinion. It would just only benefit the city. They're, like I said, they're only 6 weeks to look for kind of in the spring, and really, really pigeonholing. Like I said, I think 3 weeks is ample amount of time, and I think it would only benefit and show off both events. As far as what we would really need from the city, we will need some police services for traffic control, barricades, and cones for closures, but we intend to supplement that with any profits that we get, and we will be able to hire and put back into the city funds to other further police or any other security that we need. We usually do security, though, with volunteers. We will have a huge volunteer pool, and we have volunteers that drive up and down the street all night long. Everybody gets a two-hour shift. Whoever gets the 2-to-4 shift is not usually the best, but that is what we do. It is usually mostly volunteer run. In fact, the one in Norcross and the others I've run, we get between 200 and 300 volunteers that run this show. So although we may be helping manage this because of my expertise with Cindy, who is the business end of this, this is a volunteer run festival. We would need from the city some approval for event signage that I think we're all kind of learning where signs can go and where they can't go. We would probably need a special use permit if we decide to do alcohol. The Dunwoody restaurant group has agreed to be a part of that. We would ask that we be on the advertisement, anything that the city does as far as website or brochures or any kind of calendar listing. And we would also like to have a liaison with the city so that I don't drive Warren crazy calling him every few minutes. But other than that, I really believe, on a personal note, I've lived here for 19 years. I live across the street from Lemonade Days. It is a fabulous event. but it is a completely different entity. This is an art festival. This is not an amazing carnival, which does have arts and crafts. I respect that. But I think the city is big enough and great enough and has so many people that we deserve a great art festival. We deserve this. There's a lot of pride in having your own an art festival. Virginia Highlands, Decatur, Alpharetta, they have these events, and people get so excited that they can invite their friends and their neighbors and visitors. My 70-something-year-old parents come in every year to go to my festival from Florida, and they bring their friends. The hotels fill up because our artists stay there. The artists will send information to their shoppers and their visitors to stay at a hotel. So I look at it as a win-win. I can't wait to do it, and I hope you will allow me that opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, clarification, guys, since this is a work session, from a discussion standpoint, Brian, is that up to us whether we want to tackle that at this meeting?
Well, you can't take a vote, but you can discuss it.
Sure. All right. Well, let me open it up. I'll start down here. Let me ask a question of Frank.
Okay.
If you would,
I'm
please.
Sure, I'm sorry.
On the sponsorship side, what would your group be looking at as far as what is the scope of the sponsorship that you need from businesses, and you know, how do you go out? Again, my train of thought, again, is hearing from Mr. McCann with DPT and the Sproul Arts Center and the Dunwoody Women's Club on the concern on this date. So I'm trying to figure out my own mind facts from fiction. So is it pretty massive, or can you give us a dollar amount or number of sponsors or kind of?
Well, generally there is, we've estimated the space, let's say. So we're talking about space. There's 900 feet on that street, the stretch of street we were looking at. So when you have double size to it, you end up with about 180 booths, give or take. So 120 or 30 would be artists, and there's actually, I should say 160 booths. So there's really only room for 30 sponsors, if you will, to actually be present on the main street. Mm-hmm. Some of them might prefer to be, let's say, by the kids area. Some of them might be, you know, be sponsoring the entertainment booth and want to just be there because that's where they want to choose to be, or some of them might sponsor the food area. So you are, at this point, limited with how many. I work with sponsors. Most of my sponsors don't just want their name there. They want to be present. They want to shake hands and be visible. Like I work with Scana Energy. I work with banks. I work with real estate companies. They really, really want to shake hands. They come up. They bring. Their booth alone looks like an art festival, what they do to interact with the public. So that is about how many I would say, anywhere between 30 to 40, who 99% of them want to be present there.
Is that normally, when you're approaching businesses, do you ask on the sponsorship level, is it just a matter of, okay, I'm Ken Wright, I've got a company, I want a booth, so I would pay X amount for a booth, or is it more complex than that?
You have different levels. I mean, we have not figured out what our levels would be yet, but you know, if you want just an idea of what a level is, let's say for any other festival, you could look at Duluth or Sandy Springs or Brookhaven or Norcross or any of them, and they can go anywhere from, let's say, $1,000 all the way up to $10,000 to $20,000 if you get lucky enough. You know, let's say give you a Duluth idea. Duluth has, they have about 50 to 60. Some of the ones that are listed on ours, let's say of the 31, some of those are in kind, and they may say, well, we'll supply the water, but we would still like to be there. We'll give you 2,000 bottles of water if we can be there. Let's say that's what a Costco would do. So of the 30 or so, maybe 15 are in kind, the rest are not.
Okay.
But generally, they will look at those levels. They will see what they get for those levels. The higher up you go, the more visibility. Let's say the more visibility you would be on the crier, or the more visibility you would be on the website, or the posters, or the advertisements. Scana is usually at the top of, you know, when they want to be it, they want everything. That's okay. How it works. But 99% of them want to be there, to shake hands, to be visible, and to show that they have community support.
That makes sense. So what, and maybe this is for Warren, on other potential dates, you know, certainly from what I've heard, and I know this needs a lot more thought and discussion, but it certainly gives me pause when I hear from our major, this is a great event for one. There is absolutely no doubt this is fantastic in my mind, but it does give me pause hearing from these major institutions in Dunwoody that it could be problematic. So I'm thinking, what is a potential plan B? So I think to broaden our thought process, is there one, or just at the point that this is the best day and that's it?
I think it's really more of a question for the festival organizers, because they have a broader idea of what those dates are available and what kind of competition they may face as to certain dates from the city's perspective. We hadn't thought through the date issue, sure, because that's all really right. They're driving that train on that.
Okay.
So I defer to their assistance for that question.
Okay. Do you want to? I'm not sure if you should sit down.
Oh, I don't care. I'll be standing.
You have tennis shoes on. Soft.
I have looked at dates till I'm blue in the face. You know, my dream would be to have this wonderful October festival or whatever. But I keep going back, especially in Atlanta, the second, third, and the fourth weekend in October, there are 3 and 4 festivals in a weekend, and that's just even for the local folks. And then I look at, North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, Alabama, Florida, which is where I draw a lot of the arts from, and I just can't get them to come. And, I have a base of about 300 or so, 350 artists, and I want them to have this chance to come to Dunwoody. I want them to show off here. And so I guess you could say I did an unscientific survey to see who was available. And I never dreamed that 3 weeks would be an issue. 3 weeks to me is an eternity in art festival world. And even in Norcross, as Norcross has become a city, there's an event almost every single weekend. And instead of competing with each other, we feed off each other. We promote each other. The Tour of Homes comes to our event and promotes their function in the fall. We have 2 car shows that are, one is the week before my show in October. It's in September. And then I have, in the spring, there are 3, like, back-to-back, April, May. And they do. It's like fuel for them. They promote it. They hand out magnets. They hand out promotional literature. And they draw the crowd goes, wow, we can't wait. There's something else to do. As opposed to looking at it, oh, you're taking away from my show. My show should be the premiere. It's not about whose show is the best and whose show is the one that will be the premiere. To me, it's about Dunwoody needs to have as many great events as this great city. I mean, I can't wait to have this in my town. I mean, the area, the subdivision that I live in, how many people have seen my ads in the Dunwoody Crier? I've advertised all my shows in the Dunwoody Crier, and every single one of my neighbors says, when are you bringing this to Dunwoody? You live here. Why don't you do this for Dunwoody? Let this be your gift to us. So that's why I'm here.
Hang tight just for a second. Does anybody have any other questions for, and let me start down here with then for Francis.
Yeah, Francis, anything you do like this, and if the Super Bowl comes to town, they say, okay, if every person comes into town, this is what the expenditure will be for the local businesses and community. Do you have any kind of ballpark figure on that that you could throw out at us?
How much the city will have to spend, or how well the businesses will do?
How much the businesses will have as a return from this?
Well, I really don't ask the businesses what their dollars are. Maybe Cindy could fill you in a little bit about that, because she actually is a resident of Norcross, and so she's watched this for 6 years. Would you like to? Because I don't do this solo. She kind of keeps me grounded. This is Cindy Flynn.
Hi, I'm Cindy Flynn. I'm a resident of Norcross. I'm very active there, of course, especially in the festival that we do. And I can tell you that for Paisano's Restaurant, it's their highest grossing weekend of the year. For Dominic's Restaurant, it's their highest grossing weekend of the year. For the Taste of Britain, which is old British, just a retail shop, they are just ecstatic. I don't know if it's their highest grossing. I've never asked them that. But, it's one of the best weekends of the year that they have. Same goes for Antique Traditions and also for Good Things, another retail shop. So, and the Dunwoody Tavern, of course, also has the Norcross Tavern there, and they're ecstatic, and that's why they want to be a part of this festival because it's so good for them there. So it really is, does benefit the businesses greatly.
Okay, thank you.
Could you comment on funds that you would look for from the city and what return would come back to the city? Per se, the city proper, the city, you know, per se.
You know, originally when I brought this to Warren and I brought it to the Crier, I actually brought it to the Crier first because I have a really nice relationship with Jim and Dick, and there was never even a discussion of that. That was not even anything we wanted to do. We just wanted to have the art festival. And then the discussion of money started to come up because this does promote the city and it does promote the tourism trade because the hotels will benefit. They'll get to be there. But I don't think that discussion is truly ready to happen yet. In the other areas that I was able to do that, they had more infrastructure. They had electricity. They had water. And, you know, Norcross has all that. So it was easier to just gain those things. Could this festival be run without the funds? Sure, it could. We could do it by, you know, promoting ourselves and working with volunteers. We do it every year. It's just we're starting from ground zero, that there are no signs. There is no electricity. There's none of this stuff. There's no signage. There's zero. So could we do it? Yes, we could. Like I said, I've worked with volunteer groups, and that's all I really know. I work with the Lions and Women's Club of Norcross. They actually own the festival. I work for them. I basically do it for nothing, but that is what they do, and all their money goes to charity. All the money that we get goes to charity. I also would like to say that we were hoping that if we do make a profit, which let's pray we all do, that we would give a gift back to the city because it would be a gift to the volunteers as well because it's their city. That's kind of my goal.
Okay. Does anybody have a question for Francis? Yes, Danny.
You mentioned profit. You're doing this for your own account for profit purposes.
Yes,
right?
I am. Absolutely. And I think I deserve that after all these years of doing this.
Didn't question that.
Yeah, I do. I really do. You know, I've done it for, this will be 8 years of making no money. And people think I'm crazy. Why do I spend all this time? And I would get a small percentage of whatever's left, and I hope that we don't lose money the first zillion years. But most art festivals actually have what they call promoters. I'm not talking about Lemonade Days, or I'm not talking about, you know, Light Up Dunwoody or Tour of Homes, that kind of thing. Most shows, Virginia Highlands Decatur, they actually hire people like myself to do this because, you know, you have to travel a lot and get artists from all over the place, which I've done and will continue to do. And so I figure that I'm a Dunwoody resident, so it would be better to do it here. I've been asked by a lot of communities to do this. Sugar Hill, Chamblee, Duluth. What other ones have we been asked? LaGrange. But I figure I'm here. I want to do it here. It would be nice to be in my own backyard.
Barbara, did you have anything?
I had a question, but I think it's been answered.
Okay, great. All right, thank you very much. All right, with that, I'll open up just for any further internal discussion right now, and I'll start down on this end.
The one concern that I had, I think, actually has been addressed. I was a little bit uncomfortable when we first chatted with the organizers and the discussion centered around perhaps using $50,000 of tax revenue. I wasn't sure I was comfortable with that. I am much more comfortable with either giving them permission and the support that they need, or even providing a loan to help them get started, right? But I wasn't 100% comfortable with the idea that we were using tax money for something that other people were going to make a profit off of. So I think I'm good with it.
Danny?
I think an art festival would be a wonderful thing for the community. My comments are going to be centered around timing as opposed to weather. First, I'd like to say that everything in this community, and the reason we're sitting here today as a community, is because of volunteers. And for this council to take any action that impedes on our volunteers and the work that they've done, I think is a huge mistake. Our Dunwoody Women's Club, and I've said this in several speeches that I've given, nothing gets done here without the Women's Club being involved some way or another. Our police force opened up on April the 1st, and it was not with a very, very much involvement of the Dunwoody Women's Club and the Dunwoody Preservation Trust. We depend on these organizations, and I think to do anything that would encroach on them would be a mistake. I would also like to say that our festival is held on the third week of April for a particular reason. It's not because of that the third week of April is Mother's Day or anything. It happens to be the weekend after a terrible tornado came through our community. And it brought our community together like nothing that I've seen in 34 years of living here. And we need to keep that spirit. And we're going to need these volunteers more in the future than we have in the past. They've served an integral and important part of our growth as a city and becoming a city over the past 30, 40 years that we've tried to make this journey a reality. We're going to need our volunteers more in the future to help us raise funds to be able to do the things at Brookline Park that we want to do. We're going to need our volunteers and our nonprofit organizations more in the future to help us get the Donaldson Chestnut House to where it will become a world-class farm life museum. We're going to have to get our Dunwoody Nature Center and through a 501c3 that we have there to be an organization that can be responsible for raising the funds to build that to the character and to the quality that we in Dunwoody and the people of Dunwoody Nature Center dream of having at that facility. As you know, those volunteers a few years ago raised money to build a treehouse, and it took 5 years for that treehouse to be built. And we need to turn these organizations loose, and we need to support them, not to do things that are detrimental to them. I can tell you from having been co-president of the Dunwoody Preservation Trust, I feel very strongly that this event would have a major impact on that organization. It would impact not only the attendance potentially, it would also impact the ability we have for fundraising. We worked real hard over the past 9 or 10 years since that festival began to be able to bring that to the class it is now. This year we had our attendance increased a third over last year, and last year it was we estimated 30,000 people attended that festival. We have to support these charitable organizations. We cannot do things that are detrimental to it. There are weekends. If you look at this particular time of the year, we have lemonade days. We have the Nature Center Garden Fair, which was a tremendous success this past weekend. We have the Soapbox Derby. And quite frankly, of all these, the ones that I think would put the most heads on the beds and necessitate us having some debate about whether we should spend money would probably be the Soapbox Derby, because that's a North Georgia thing where people are going to be coming in here for a weekend with their families. I talked to the people at the DeKalb Convention Visitor Bureau today at the board meeting that I attended. I talked to the director there and asked him how much revenue would be brought into the hotels by an art festival. He didn't think much would be brought in by the arts festival. And for us to spend money on that would be a terrible mistake. I think that we should be looking at having this event at another time of the year, in the fall would be good. As to whether we did it with these ladies or not, I think it's up to them. I think they've come forward with a proposal, and I'd be supportive of doing that. But what I'm hearing is that they don't think they can get through their artists an October event set up. I think the concept is good. In fact, we've talked about this kind of concept in some of the DPT board members over the past year or two, is having a fall event of some sort like this, where we would celebrate the autumn harvest season like we do the spring with the lemonade days. I would also like to say that our festival does have juried artists that participate. This year we had 56 of those lined up on the main street of the Brookline Park. They may not be the kind of art that perhaps our sponsors of this event would like, but they are people that show up there every year proud to present their merchandise. And I would just think that I would just like to suggest that this council really, really needs to think very, very carefully about impeding on any of our existing festivals, and you need to look very seriously at the importance of these organizations in our community and the lifeblood of our community.
Thank you, Mr. Ross.
Well, you know, I think, first of all, it comes down to almost like the farmer's market issue. It's not whether we're going to have one, it's maybe where or when we're going to have it. I don't think there's anybody up here that's going to be against the art festival. Well, maybe there is, but I haven't heard that yet. So I think the whole idea is that the arts festival is something that we want as a city. What the impact on the date is, I think that's something we probably have to take a look at. I'm not totally sure that it would be that much, but I envision our city not just having one thing in the spring and one thing in the summer and one thing in the fall, but I envision our city as we enhance it to become more of a city that has, wow, let's go to Dunwoody because there's always something going on there. And I don't know how far apart you have to space it. I'm not really for sure about that. But I think it's something you have to take a look at. I questioned both of the ladies, Cindy and Frances, when they addressed us the other day as far as being Mother's Day, because I just went through two events, which I explained to them that took a hit because of Mother's Day on that weekend. But they seem to be very comfortable with that, so I mean, they're more the experts for that. But I guess what I'm trying to say is I think the city has to have room for a lot of things. And I think it's across the spectrum, whether it's the arts, whether it's sports, whether it's whatever it is. I think you have to kind of hit everyone's taste as you're going across that. And you know what? I don't think anybody here wants to do anything at the detriment of any other group. I know nobody does, you know. Barbara's sitting right there. My wife belongs to the Dunwoody Women's Club. I know, you know, all about that. And I don't think that they would be hurt in any way, shape, or form by this with what they are doing. But again, you know, taking a look at the date, I don't know, you know, is it trial and error? Do we do it and then say, hey, wow, that really hurt us here? And, you know, the biggest thing probably that would affect either one of these is the weather, the attendance. I don't know. It seems to me like they are kind of separate items. I don't think the family that brings the kids to ride the ponies and things like that would probably, in all respect, be maybe the same family as you go to this. But if it brings money into the community, it brings money into our businesses, I think that's something we really need to take a good hard look at. And the bigger this is as far as artists and the thing is concerned, it's a matter of economics, it will bring in, to me, more money for our community, more money for our businesses. And I think, one of the things we also have to take a look at is how is the effect on our businesses. So I guess date's an issue that we need to consider, we need to look at it, but I'd like to have everybody have an open mind as we go into this and also take a look at, not only the art festival, I don't know what else there is out there, but I'd like to see something coming in the next month, you know, so that we have something ongoing, that we become an active city across the entire spectrum of arts or whatever it is. Thank you, Danny.
I think about every facet's been covered, and I'll just withhold a comment right now. But I think we've looked at a lot of this, and we do have almost a year before this starts. I realize we have to do a lot of advanced planning, but we still need to have further discussions. I think really get some facts and figures, like from the CBB. What does this attract? What does this bring to hotel visitors in the area? And just get some data to work on. But, I don't really have a good look on this.
If I can, yeah. One other thing, Danny, and I'll end it. Go ahead.
I'd just like to say that the events that have taken place, be they Light Up Dunwoody, the 4th of July Parade, the Lemonade Days, all these events have been done without any assistance from any civic organization, city of Dunwoody or the county or anybody. The county, they are our partner because they furnished Brooklawn Park. But other than that, there's no money given to the PPT, and we've been able to survive without that. And quite frankly, I was a little bit miffed that we were even talking about money without the organization of our CVB being put in place. I think that's putting the cart before the horse and maybe doing another ready fire aim in this council, which we don't want to do.
Thank you. Well, we didn't just for the record on the money thing was not brought off for the discussion. So I think, like any idea of when that was floated, it was removed as a discussion item. But for this, let me end it, guys. And Warren, we can bring this back up. And Francis, thank you very much for doing this again. I think on behalf of this city and council, again, I think there is a huge desire to, I think it's Councilman Shortle said that to have these
fantastic activities. I think it's just a matter of, like anything else, you would think a farmer's market would be an easy thing to accomplish, but it's not. And I think this is similar, and this is the beauty of localized government. We have these type of discussions and actually have this type of input. Believe it or not, this is a positive, not positive thing. But let me just end it. The one concern that I'll end with that keeps sticking on my mind is not so much the date and the people, it's the sponsorship. I keep on coming back with the potential. There's only so much sponsorship in this community and so much ability to sponsor events in one time frame. I don't have the answer, but that's a final thought. That is really my biggest concern, is would one cannibalize the other? And I guess that's a two-way street, but no. Thank you. But we'll end discussion on that and move forward to the public hearing. Without there are no objections, I'm going to move into the public hearing. Seeing that there are none, we're going to open up the public hearing. I do not believe there's a staff report on this, so I will go and open up public comments. And I would ask, we do have, Mr. City Attorney, is that 15 minutes per side? Is that correct?
That's correct. 15 minutes per comment.
Okay. Well, then I'm gonna ask 15 minutes pro and con, and some of you might not be sure what pro and con is for this particular piece, because there's two items out there, and we're not sure what we're going to end up voting on as far as the Development Authority or 501c6. So make up your own minds and what line you want to stand in, but I'm going to ask, again, there's 15 minutes total on both sides. We have never hit the maximum, at least when I've been here. I'm not sure with Mayor Pro Tem, we might have one day or two, but we'll open it up, and I'm going to ask anybody that wishes to speak in favor to please line yourselves up here at the podium and... That's not identified here, so it's not. That's why I say it's a little nebulous. So pick your pleasure, Mr. City Attorney. Would you like to elaborate? I think it's just in favor of a convention or visitor bureau.
We don't have a pro or con on the agenda or a recommendation to have a pro or con in.
I think you can just open up public discussion.
Okay, then we'll just open up for general comment. Please make your way to the podium and.
Can I make a comment? Since we have those who are in favor of a C6, there are four people who would like to speak. I don't know, in terms of an authority, if there's folks who would like to speak with respect to that. So if that would help guide you, Mr. Mayor, in terms of that, I could tell you who they are, if they can speak. And
yeah, absolutely. I have, that's a good idea. Brian, yeah, no objection. So anybody, we'll start with the authority. Anybody? Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Okay, so a development authority, if anybody wishes to speak in regards, seeing that there's no one, 501c6.
Hey, Mr. Mayor, how about yeah. Better again with the CBB in general?
Well, that was my third one. Thank you, City Attorney. So I'll start. Is anybody against the CBB? Please make yourself comfortable at the podium. Seeing that there's none, now let's move to the 501c6. Please make your way to the podium. Mr. Dallas.
I believe you want to be first, and then Mr. Richardson. Which one would you guys prefer? Be first. Okay. Come on, man.
Please just let us know who you are and where you're from for the record. And
certainly. My name is Jim Sprouse. I'm Executive Director for the Georgia Hotel and Lodging Association. My members are the hotels across the state, and including in the Dunwoody area, and they asked me to join you tonight and have some comments on 501c6 mostly in favor of 501c6. But a couple of general things I want to say. I've been making notes furiously as I go. Local government, God, you got to love it. It's kind of exciting. I commend you all to be here and the audience as well. But it's an exciting time for Dunwoody as you define yourself to the world. That's really what CBB does, is identify the brand for Dunwoody and get those people to come here, bring their events, bring their travels here. The hotel community is excited about the development, eager to make it a success. That's what they do every day. They're very sophisticated in developing marketing campaigns to bring business, events, and travelers to the hotels. And the more coordinated and the more successful that they are, the more successful the community is as a whole. Hotels are economic generators, employing a local workforce and having guests that spend their money in your local businesses. In fact, I've seen various studies, and they talk about spending a dollar for marketing returns over $7 into local businesses, and that seems to be pretty consistent across the country. All the research that I could do shows the majority of CVBs are following the 501c6 model. It involves all the stakeholders. It gets the people who have a vested interest in seeing the success of the group involved on a regular basis. And the stats are there. I looked it up on the National Association for Direct Marketing Organization, the vast majority of 501c6s, as is the Georgia Hotel and Lodging Association. That's our model. We're governed by a board of hoteliers and on our board of directors, and they guide everything that we do. One thing I noted is that the CVB would be the center point for all of the activities in terms of marketing the area, the benefits, and they also are very good at putting metrics to everything. You know, some of the questions you asked about the discussion a little bit earlier, you know, if you bring a particular event in, what's that going to mean to a business? Well, that's what the CVB will do for you. And a lot of the discussion we had tonight, I think, really falls into their work area. Another point I'd like to make is Georgia Code is very specific on how that hotel motel tax is spent. I looked up the regulations, and I think it's like 17 pages of code on how it should be spent, how it can be distributed, what it's to be used for. There is a review board that meets every year to look to see how the money is spent. So it's, you know, it's watched very carefully. So you really need an organization in place before you start dispersing funds. And I just wanted to mention that because of some of the discussion that I heard here. But, you know, basically we support the 501c6 model. We're happy to assist however that we can. We can pull in additional experts if you would like. I couldn't get everybody I wanted here tonight because I only had a few days' notice. I did bring with me Spurgeon Richardson, former president of the Atlanta Convention and Visitors Bureau, and he's just a wealth of knowledge. So if I may, I'll let him speak next.
Mr. Mayor, and members of the City Council, I don't know if I'm a wealth of knowledge. I just retired at the end of December after 18 years with the Atlanta Convention and Visitors Bureau, and was also served as chairman of the International Association of Convention and Visitors Bureau. So I've got a fairly good handle on what's going on around the country. And I can't add a whole lot to what Jim said, except that number one, I think you really need to keep the Bureau out of politics. And I think the best way to keep the Bureau out of politics is to have a board, to have an executive committee to go along with it, and to have people in the industry represented, and also have people in the community represented. I'd go to Dick Williams and say, Dick, I want you to be on my board, I want you to be on my executive committee. By the way, we need the front page of the once a month or something like that. I go to Bill McCann and just left Paul and said, Bill, you were the marketing guy for the Olympics. You can help us right here in the Olympics. I mean, right here in Denver. So a lot of things I think that you can do by being a 501c6. I think that'd be very, very important. When you get into special events, Robin, I was kind of interested in what you were saying, because if you do it for one group, what are you going to say when the next group comes? And then what are you going to say when the next group comes? And what are you going to say when the next group comes? So the way we did it at the Bureau, and most bureaus will do it, is that it's our job to market and sell the event. It's your job to go out and put the event on and make sure that it happens. And so I think, you know, again, our job is to market and sell, and you need people to come in and actually sponsor and put the event on, and you market and sell the event. Another thing I think you need to understand is that you don't have that big of a budget with hotel motel taxes out here. I mean, it's just not going to be that big. I mean, downtown in Atlanta, we've got a budget of $13 to $15 million every year. A ton of money. You're not going to have that much money. So I think it becomes real important how you spend that money. And you need to run it again like a business. So how do you do that? You all know how to do that. I would have a meeting at 4:30 a.m. in the morning, but, you know, I might, you know, number one, you plan, you work, and you work, you plan. You need to develop a plan, you need to develop a budget, and then you determine what falls where, what time of the year, where you're going to get the greatest return on your investment. And as Jim pointed out, there are ways to measure. I mean, anytime we do an event, you know, the Bible convention's in town right now. You know, that's worth about $30 million to this city. When the Final Four comes in, we know what that's worth. We know what the Super Bowl's worth. We know what a meeting or convention's worth. And you've got Craig, I'll tell you something.
Right here.
Craig runs one of the best hotels in the community. He can help in putting all of that together. Hoteliers have got a real stake in this. So, again, I guess all I can add to what's been said is you need a plan, you need a budget. The sponsors kind of thing. You know, I don't... From a sponsorship standpoint, if you're doing an annual dinner, an annual event that you're putting on, you can do that. But if you're doing an event like a flower show or something like that, they should be responsible for going out and getting those sponsors and not you. So, that's about all I can add. But I'd be happy to help in any way that I can. I live about 5 miles down the road. Dick Williams used to be a friend.
Mr. Richardson.
Yes, sir.
It's still an open public comment, but I would ask you, if you could please state, and I'm going to close public comment, we might have some questions for you.
Sure.
If your time allows, it'd be fantastic.
Just make the questions easy.
Yes, sir.
I'm a University of Georgia grad.
Amen. Okay. Anybody else here to speak?
Just real quick, and I want to take a few seconds here, Mr. Mayor. I'm Craig Hillier, General Manager of Crown Plaza, Ravinia. And I certainly want to thank Mr. Richardson and Mr. Sprouse for being here with us today. Obviously, we want to use any taxes generated by the hotels to support the Dunwoody community. We truly see our hotels, restaurants, and retail as a huge draw in this community. The PCID would be a great example of how we're taxing ourselves and using that money to support the city. I do agree with Mr. Richardson regarding the 501c6, as do all the hoteliers in this community. We believe that establishing a contractual relationship with the city that includes goals, objectives, and incentives will result in accountability for us, the customers, and maximize the taxes that will be used to improve your city. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, Ms. Dallas.
The issue of the hotel-motel tax, to me, is really one of trust and taxes. And, you know, we were all involved in the formation of this city. Citizens for Dunwoody, Dunwoody Yes, and countless other groups. But more importantly, it was an overwhelming desire to let the citizens be involved. I think local decisions close to home was a moniker many of us use. And we also said we could do it at the same level of service with the same amount of taxes that we've been paying. I think you would call that. And there are really two views of governance I'd like to point out, and I think two people illustrate them best. One is the CEO Lee on the Levitan view. And I think if you would look at her view, it's to empower local communities. And that would be like Brook Run, Murphy Candler Park, Dunwoody Nature Center, School Center for the Arts, and the PCID. Look how they were effective and worked under her regime. Under more recently, CEO Vernon Jones, he was committed to DeKalb County government running local community organizations. Look at how Brook Run was done with him, Murphy Candler Park, Dunwoody Nature Center, and South DeKalb Arts Center. But you'll notice I left one off, and that was the PCID. That was left off because the governance structure that was set up by many of us back then was to ensure that the business community within the Dunwoody area had the greatest say as to how it was run. And thank goodness we did, because they've done an excellent job, in fact, have become a model, not only for our region, but for, I think, the state and the country as a whole, as we hear Yvonne talk about it so well. But, you know, the question of what we're facing, which is a political authority for a nonprofit C6. You know, we've already had some discussions about things before the egg is even hatched. I mean, we've heard recently about the city manager and the discussions about the fine arts show. Probably a good idea, but is that really something that should be discussed with the organization that we create? In talk to the School Center for the Arts and the other organizations that are involved with this very issue. There's always been discussions about who should serve as an executive director. And, you know, isn't it premature if we're going to have a professional director? We need to have professional as it relates to those kinds of things. Therefore, we need a board first, the executive committee of that. And, you know, there's been discussion as to how it might be used in terms of, you know, should it be used for some of the destination marketing, or should it be used to facilitate, for example, some of the historic buildings and things of that nature here. And those are some of the questions that really are premature, given that we don't have the organization. But it indicates, you know, I'm saying without malice, that it's easy to get these things political. And you've heard me talk a little bit about FAMPLEX, the Laurel and Hardy Museum, as examples. But, you know, you've got even on a statewide basis, the Georgia Music Hall of Fame and the Georgia Golf Hall of Fame. they are drains on the state budget that never have brought a return. They will probably shut down because they cannot sustain themselves. And they require those subsidies. So really, what is the difference between an authority and a C6? An authority is perpetual until a future board dissolves it. It can issue bonds if allowed, and the members are appointed by the government officials. C6, each year, it must renew the contract. In other words, it's a performance-based organization. And it can attract a few grants that an authority can't. Not all of them, but a few. And it's a membership-based nonprofit organization. Now realize this, the language that allows us to spend the CVB money is under Section 105, Tourism, Conventions, and Trade Shows. It states specifically, quote, the Dunwoody Convention and Visitors Bureau is hereby created. Left out of that sentence is the word authority. So I think it does raise a legal question as to whether or not an authority can be created in the first instance. But I throw that out there as a lawyer, because lawyers like to address great questions. That's how they earn their fees, and then judges decide. But, you know, that's just one of those points that exists in our charter, and it's just the way it is. And, you know, CVBs are uniquely business-oriented, and that's to be contracted with some of the other organizations. The Planning Commission, the ZDA, Zoning Board of Appeals, and the Community Council, those are exercising the police power of the state. When you act for zoning, it's the police power that allows you to act. And CVBs are really around just to encourage business. And, you know, the question of a couple things need to be clarified, and I know it sounds expensive to say it costs $125 to put a head and a bed around here, but really I think you've heard it here in many other places. There's a benefit of a 7-to-1 ratio where the restaurateurs and the retail benefit first. But more importantly, whatever metric you use, it really doesn't matter whether it's an authority or a C6. I mean, you're spending money. Hopefully you're going to get the best return you can because it's doing a good job, irrespective of the organization. So the metric has to be the same for both. But I would suggest to you it's not just $125 per head and bed. And, you know, we've talked with a lot of folks, cities like Marietta, Alpharetta, Sandy Springs, and Decatur. We've spoken with a lot of folks at the state level, Joy Wallstrom with the Tourism and Development Alliance of Georgia, Brittany Gray and Bruce Green with the Atlanta Metro Regional Tourism, which is part of the Georgia Department of Economic Development, and Michael Bush, who's the Director of Research for the Department of Community Affairs. These are really good experts. But the ones on the private sector experts, since the public ones can't give an opinion, apparently, is they said that, you know, with the authorities, they're more political, they're more difficult to dissolve by design, and they take up a lot more of their consulting time in terms of how they're spending their monies. And as you've heard, there are a lot of rules, 16 or 17 pages of rules. Well, what I recommend is I will shut down with this. I frankly would recommend a C6. And the way I would say is it'd be 9 members, 3 of whom are appointed by the city, 3 of whom would be appointed by the hoteliers, 1 retail / restaurant, 1 out of the PCID, and 1 from a Dunwoody business organization. You have a balanced organization representing the city's interest, representing the hoteliers, as well as representing the retailing, which benefits so greatly from this. And getting back to the conclusion, trust and taxes, and that is, you know, the trust. Should we have the government decide how to grow our businesses in Dunwoody, or should we rely on the private sector with a performance-based model that we've heard a little bit about today? And taxes, ultimately it does come down to taxes, because if this organization does a good job, they'll increase that 3% that goes towards our general operations. And that's really what it's about, isn't it, when we keep our promises to the citizens. So I hope that in deciding this, I know you've considered this, and it's a tough decision. But you know, for me, it comes down to the C6 for the reasons I've stated. And I think in the long run, the citizens would agree with you, but here's the deal. If you don't like it, you can change it. If you put in an authority, you have to have a majority vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dowell. Is there anybody else? Brian, what do you have down on time?
Yeah, for about 30 seconds.
Would anybody like to speak for 29 seconds? 24 seconds?
For 30 seconds. Lindsay Ballou, Dunwoody resident. First moved here in 75, moved back to raise my kids, so this is where I want to be. Two things I want to hit on. Number one, just reemphasize the fact that you do have to renew that contract every year. So as far as accountability, there is no more accountability than that, no better accountability. And number two is a timeliness. DeKalb is doing a good job right now, but we know that the people here in Dunwoody can do a better job. So let's try to figure this out sooner rather than later, just so we can really spend those dollars and dedicate those dollars to Dunwoody.
Thank you, Linda. Okay, with no objections, I am going to close the public comments and close the public hearing. All right, seeing no objections, the public hearing is closed. And now I will open it up if there's any additional discussion that anybody wants to have at this moment.
Basically, I see it's a couple of decisions here. Well, three, initially, the stay with the cab, C6 or authority. Stay with the cab, I think, is not an option. As quickly as we can get out of that relationship, I think we could. The second decision, once you come down to it, is the structure, how that board and executive committee are made up and how those folks are placed in those positions. And I think that merits a lot more discussion on, I'm sure it's going to be some lively discussion on how we, one or the other, which choice we make there, and then how the structure of that board is set up to benefit the community.
Thank you, Don.
Well, I don't even help me know that the cap is not an option to me. I think the other way, I think you're right. We have to take a look at this. The one thing I think we have to remember here as a board, up here in the council, is that, we're the ones that are responsible. People put us here. Their faith and trust are in us. And how we go about this is the way we should decide. And the one thing we need to do, I think, is to make sure that I'm always fearful of government because, government likes to build empires, they like to build little committees, they like to build groups, and then all of a sudden that groups get triggered. And I'm not totally for sure if I know the exact numbers, but I think on the DeKalb County Visitors Bureau, it's somewhere around $2.1 million or something they take in a year. And they spend almost $1 million on salaries and things like that. And those are the things that I'm fearful of here. So that's what I'm going to go forth. And if we do have a board, I think the cross-section is good. Well, it's mandatory. Not good, it's mandatory. I think we really have to pick and choose very carefully so that this council doesn't lose total control of the whole situation here. And, one of my fears is C6 is that all of a sudden, they get the majority and they start running that way. Yes, we have to renew them every year, but, after a year, we need to take a good hard look at this and how we're going to do it, and probably think out of the box a little bit on this.
All right, thank you, Ms. Shortle. Danny?
I'd like to ask a couple of questions, Mr. Spurgeon, if I can.
Yes, sir. I have an expert, so I'm not really surprised.
If you want to sit down because of the back surgery, feel free.
Okay, let me see. Thanks.
Yeah, please do have a seat to make yourself comfortable.
Thank you.
First question, the ABCB, ACVB, ACVB, I got my alphabet soup there. You're collecting, what, an 8% hotel tax?
7%, right now, I believe, at the gym. 7% to 8% sales tax for a total of 15%.
Okay. And one of the things, we're collecting 5% a year, which 3% goes to the city, 2% goes into the CVB.
Right.
And we expect revenues this year to be about $700,000. It's down from about $900,000 last year. When the ACVB was formed, was it formed as an authority or as a C6 initially?
As far as I know, I wasn't here when it was formed. I think it was formed as a C6. I think it's always been a C6, I believe.
Because my impression, my understanding was it was initially, as most of the new cities, we're a new city, and so we haven't had this. We don't have a long-standing history. They did operate as an authority, and then they went to C6 in many cases.
I can check that out, because we have some. I mean, I asked to the Georgia World Congress and Authority Board. I contracted them.
Right.
But I can run that down for you. That's
right.
Easy enough to do.
Okay. I think it's been differentiated. The difference between a C6 and an authority is that they all can do the same thing. They tax, they promote, they have a governing body that is either established within the authority, a board, or within the C6. And as far as what they can do, it's fairly similar, including grants can be given to both C6s and authorities. That's no differentiation on grants from one to the other. The differentiation is that an authority has the ability to float bonds if we wanted to have some kind of facility. At this time, we have no plans at this time, nothing in our plan for any kind of facility, but bonding is one thing that an authority can do that C6 can't do. Is that right?
I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know. Okay. The C6, I know, you know, we market, sell, private, nonprofit, and when I think of an authority, I think of a building, and everything they can do as it relates to a building. And with us, it's marketing and selling. You know, the other thing about the board, who's got control of it? I mean, you know, the mayor's got a representative on there, city council's got a representative, so I mean, you've got government really well represented on our board.
May I interrupt, Danny, real quickly? For Mr. Richardson, how is your board, just out of curiosity, the makeup as far as appointments? Is the council each get one, mayor gets one? What is the makeup of that?
Sorry, yes, good question. The makeup of our board, it's an interesting board. We've got 100 people on our board.
Wow.
We've got 20 people on our executive committee. And most people will say, Spurge, why have you got 100 people on your board? Well, if I only had 10 people on my board, I probably wouldn't have the Coca-Cola company represented. I wouldn't have the banks represented. And people still don't know what CBBs do. And we market and sell. So I said, if I get 100 people on my board, that gives me an opportunity to bring people under my tent, get them more involved, and it's really worked well.
Who has the authority to do the board then? Is it yourself that says, do you say I want 50 or I want 100 or you might want 300?
You take it down with the board and then the executive committee.
Okay.
As to the size of the board and the executive committee.
Okay, how about the executive committee then? Is that the nuts and the bolts that then those come from mayor and council or
council would be represented on the executive committee as well as the board.
Okay, how many on the executive committee?
About 20.
Okay, 20.
Give
or take
a few.
How many for quorum? Nah, just teasing.
Right. Whatever. Right?
a lot of fun. Go ahead. Yeah.
How is the executive committee determined, appointed, whatever you want to use for a term?
We appoint the executive committee, get approval from the board to do that.
We use who?
It's president of the CBB. I would go into our board and say, you know, let's put these people on the executive committee. We'll talk about it, put together a selection committee, and then presented that to the board, and then that became the executive committee once the board approved. I mean, we've got plenty of checks and balances in there, so everybody has an opportunity to be involved and participate.
Okay.
Let me ask a question. Our next-door neighbor, Sandy Springs, has a 501c6.
Right.
And all the members of that 501c6 are appointed by mayor and council. My question is this. Is it really about your charter and whether it's a 501c6 or whether it's an authority, or is it really about who gets to pick the members? It strikes me that it's about who selects the board. If you're a 501c6 and the city council and the mayor get 3 spots out of 9, that's one sort of organization. And it doesn't matter, as best I can see, whether it's an authority or a C6, as opposed to whether the mayor and the council select all the members, and then do you really care, except for the ability to float a bond?
Yeah, I think the industry ought to be involved. I mean, the hotel is collecting money. And I think Craig and the guys in the hotel should have a big, big say in it. They can also, more than anybody else, tell you how to best spend those dollars coming into this community.
But
it would be different, for example, in downtown ACBB. I mean, we have big meetings in Convention City. We've got the Georgia World Congress Center. Well, you don't have that out here. But you've got great hotels out here. You've got great restaurants out here. And you've got an opportunity to really bring people in on weekends and for special events. I'm trying to think on the executive committee. We put together a list, go to the board, get approval of the board, and get the executive committee to do it.
I think his situation is probably a little different in that he's got so many people there that in order to get something done, they have to have an executive committee, and what he's describing probably makes sense in terms of his particular organization, because you are trying to reach out to all the corporations,
right,
that we have. in addition to the hotelers and the restaurateurs and the merchants.
Okay, any
but
other...
But normally the way we do that, that's an interesting point you raised. We put together a plan at the beginning of the year, and once that plan is put together, I mean, we implement it and we execute that plan. We do not go running back to the board executive committee saying we want to spend $10,000 on this or $20,000 on that. We've got a plan in place. And I think that's a really important point because whoever you get in here to run this bureau, I mean, not going to have a lot of money. They're going to be pulled in 10,000 different directions. Everybody wants a piece of them. So they've really got to have an opportunity to make decisions. And when they need help, they should be able to go to the executive committee. Mm-hmm. The executive committee should really be well represented in the community. And probably with that, you know, 3 or 4 good hoteliers and people involved with the industry.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Richardson? Thank you so much for thank you for coming out today and sticking around with us as well.
I'll check on the authority and find out.
Okay, that's fantastic. Thank you very much. Okay, other internal discussion. Robert, I think I was down to you. Then let me end it. Take my executive story and maybe put a cherry on top of this sundae. Just with some thoughts here. I think Robert and Danny, you came. The chamber put on the meeting. We had Sandy Springs. Represented Roswell, maybe Marietta or Kennesaw. But let me just tell you what I take away, and I've spoken with a couple of you offline just in banter, but nothing in detail. But my takeaway from that was twofold. One, that this is, you know, I kind of walked away saying this is a small company that we're going to be launching. Right, and it's going to be very entrepreneurial just because of the budget. And the one thing I walked away with was, that it's the hire. Who do we hire to run this? It's going to be make or break with this thing. Sandy Springs was really big saying, you know, the board is big. The board helps, and they help strategize and do the stuff, but the personnel is really who's going to make things happen or make things fail. So I walked away with that. The second thing I walked away with was as far as the makeup that I go back to Danny's one of Danny's white papers, and I think obviously as we bring this back up and talk about it, but as far as the makeup of the board, I think we may be close in his suggestions. As far as I think there were two hoteliers, three hoteliers, there was a district representative, I got a vote, I think a person from the business community, a person from the PCID. I think that makeup is on target. More broad than Sandy Springs. Sandy Springs seems to really weigh on the complete control of council. Robert, I don't know if you all walked away with that.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I walked away with.
Yeah. What? The Sandy Springs board is made up of 5 people, 2 of which are a council person and the mayor. And the reason no hotelers are on that board is that they're in their ordinance. You have to live in the city of Sandy Springs in order to be on that board, and none of the hotelers live in Sandy Springs. They all live in Dunwoody.
yeah, good point. So anyway, I'll end it on that. But I mean, the two big walkaways that I got from the meeting and the other thoughts and the things that I've read given out from the chamber and other pieces. So I think with that, again, we'll continue discussion and try to get a note on it. Danny?
I'd like to suggest that we put this on the work session for June. At that time, I'll have an update to the white paper with additional comments and thoughts on it, and then have a first read in June and a vote on it in the meeting after that.
Okay. Warren, can you put that on? Or Sharon? Sharon? Thanks. Okay.
I guess, you know, again, I just want to reemphasize that, you know, when we voted on this city, what did we tell the people? Local decisions close to home. We told them that. And we told them that every meeting. The reason they voted for it is that the city was for us to run our own entity. And having, someone on this committee that has a vested interest in the city is fine with me. Having someone that lives here would be better with me. But having someone on this committee that has neither a vested interest or, you know, lives here is outside of my thinking. So I think the one thing that we need to make sure as we set up this board is that, you know, we don't want the board to be all of our picks, because otherwise, you know, we might as well just do it ourselves. But we definitely want this board in this situation where we, our picks are not just in the mass minority and they just get voted down every time, because these dollars belong to the citizens of this city. They don't belong to us. They don't belong to anybody else. They belong to the citizens of that city. And we are very responsible to what we do with that. And if you go down in history, governments are always, always beaten. With Ronald Reagan, they just don't know how to take care of your money like you do. So I think that's one of the things. We keep our view on that, and we keep make darn sure that we at least have enough control over this whole situation where it doesn't get out of hand and it just goes down the road. If the people we're talking about, probably not. But we're setting a policy that's not only good for today, it's going to be good down the road. And this isn't a policy that you want every council that gets elected to have to say, well, gosh, we got to adjust that. We ought to make sure that what we are doing will, you know, spend the time as it goes forward.
All right, thank you. Okay, we'll move on. First read, Sharon. Officially, Sharon,
first read.
Could you do the first read?
In ordinance amending chapter 23, the city of Dunwoody passed ordinances by creating a doctor's mock program.
All right, thank you. All right, Richard.
Okay. We have been through Representative DHA, and I know, Mayor, we had talked about doing an adopt-a-spot program within the city. And we've had, fortunately, in the city, through volunteer efforts, there's a number of the public right-of-way traffic islands that are being landscaped and maintained by organizations within the city now. But we're also aware that there are many other spots within the city that we would like to encourage organizations to do that. And we have even been approached by several groups. You heard the lady earlier tonight. We've had another business that wants to adopt Winter's Chapel and Peeler, and we need to develop a policy to regulate and control it so that we have a way to do that. The first part of it is just the ordinance, which allows us to establish the program, allows the Public Works to establish the policy under which it will be run. It also establishes the ability for the City Council to charge fees for the review of plans or the signage and that. That's a simple ordinance change. I don't think there's much issue with the ordinance itself. That just authorizes us to do the program itself. The more meat of it is the actual policy itself. And what I've presented is the draft policy that we've developed based on the initial input we received from DHA, plus a review to see what other cities have done. A couple things we have looked at and have been discussed, whether we do. Traditionally, a lot of cities have adopt-a-spot type programs where they promote landscape design. They also have adopt-a-road type programs where they do litter control. From what I've seen from what a lot of other cities have done, those that have adopt-a-spot programs actually kind of combine the two together, where you can do an adopt-a-spot and only do litter control. You don't have to do landscaping if that's what the organization in that area chooses. I'll use the example right now of Mount Vernon Road, west of Ashford Dunwoody. There's been a lot of interest about keeping that area clean and litter control there. That's a good adopt-a-road spot, but it's probably beyond an organization to try to go in there and landscape that stretch of road, whereas some of the more traffic islands and intersections would be more ideal for an adopt-a-spot landscape. But I think we can maintain that under one program instead of trying to write two parallel programs. I think it'll be easier to administer that way. I don't know how much y'all have reviewed there's a lot of details in the draft policy. Like I said, it's a draft policy. Mm-hmm. I want to get input from y'all. I want to get input from the welcome input from the community to see how we can adjust it before we adopt it as the official policy going forward. So.
Okay. Let me just Well, let me pass for a second. I'm going to call on. I'd ask for Gordon Jackson to join us with the DHA, but let me put you on hold for a second, Gordon, and let me open up if anybody has comments. And Tom,
I think it's a great idea. I mean, a group of my neighbors and I asked to do this. You know, these things mostly occur in a lot of places in the city, gateways to the city. Mm-hmm. And the one that's in my house right now is a 5-foot-tall pile of mulch and about 3 feet of grass on it. That right now doesn't say, welcome to Dunwoody, you know, tall grass and broken glass.
Good.
I love that. Christian, I guess one question. You don't have to be a charitable organization or business to do this. You can do it as a neighborhood association.
You can do it as a neighborhood. It's open to any organization. And the way I would envision the fee, you know, we want to put a fee structure in there because if it's a business, obviously we want to do it that way. But we want to have the ability that if it's a nonprofit or a neighborhood organization, that we could, as a city, decide to waive the fees for those organizations for volunteer efforts. So, yeah, it could be any organization at all.
Okay, any other questions for Richard, I'm sorry, did you have one?
I just got a quick comment. Number one, I've been pushing this since day one. I love it for Richard. I'd be so glad to see this. I wouldn't be harassing about that. I think it's a fantastic program. And I think all the controls are here. Richard, one question I got. I did not see that schools were in there. Now, and I know the age limit and all that kind of thing. Is that a school, a community activity, or is that called or some other definition?
I think the intent was that schools could be in there. I said civic, educational type of organization. Could be a civic organization, educational. Really, any organization can do it. I mean, there's no...
Well, I think this would be a tremendous program for schools.
The only requirement we would ask because of the safety is that they have appropriate adult supervision. I think we've written that into the policy that there needs to be appropriate adult supervision.
Okay.
I can't wait.
Danny.
There's a permit involved in doing this, is that right?
There's a permit only from the aspect of review and control of, for one, we're essentially establishing a contract with the organization that we're allowing them to maintain a section of right-of-way, and they're agreeing to maintain that section of right-of-way for a certain period of years. And there's got to be controls in that if they don't maintain it, what happens with that.
Is this something that's renewable on an annual basis? I mean, there are two things. I like the program. I think what Bill Grant initiated here, I think, has been a wonderful thing. And I would propose that the intersection of Mount Vernon and Ashford Dunwoody, that we not charge him any permit fee to redo that because he kept it so beautifully for so long, and he ought to be able to step right back in there and maintain that position himself.
To answer both of your questions, the way I have it written now, and based on what I've seen in other cities, they set contracts either anywhere from 1 to 4 years. I've seen per contract. I picked 2 years as, you know, 1 year, especially if you're installing landscaping, seems to me too short for an organization. But at the same time, organizations change, so you don't want to necessarily commit an organization, you know, lock in an organization for more than a couple of years. But that is renewable, so that if once an organization gets a spot, they can continually renew that spot. They won't get kicked out. They get first priority on it. The other thing is, I would envision that anyone that has a spot that's maintaining it now, as long that they would be grandfathered in, as far as they would get priority on that spot. We would ask them to sign the agreement because we are asking them to maintain the right-of-way, but otherwise we would waive any fees that are out there that they can continue doing what they're doing.
Okay,
and right. We would just ask them to sign the agreement.
I love it.
We're going to have to vote on the ordinance.
Correct.
The guidelines are something you guys administer, or are we going to vote on the guidelines as well?
I'll let Warren answer the procedurals on that.
My understanding is that the ordinance would be the only thing the council would be passing, and then from implementation, we would handle the guidelines. The contracts will actually not be, they're designed in your booklet as two-way contract. They'll actually probably be a one-way contract by the time we're finished with it, and everything else will be handled staff.
Perfect.
And the council will vote on any fee structure that we charge. By resolution, that's in the ordinance, that they will have to vote on any fees we charge.
or approve it, fees whichever.
Okay, great. Now, with that, let me invite Gordon up, and if most of you remember, or some of you might not, given our committee, the multiple committees, we had a adopted spot committee, and anything you referred to bugging Richard about it, but the adopted spot committee is looking at right-of-way adopted spots and all the sorts of things the last 4 or 5 months, so I called on Gordon to just...
Mr. Mayor, City Council, thank you very much. Again, for the record, I'm Gordon Jackson, President of the Dunwoody Homeowners Association. And just again, for the record, DHA has maintained for a number of years a list, and we didn't have any authority to do it, but we did it, simply because we had any number of people who were wanting to adopt particular spots in Dunwoody, and that has been going on. So we have been actually running the program ourselves. We're now at the point of beginning to transfer and transition into another program. I might also say that DHA also, we have several other programs that we do run, one of those being July 4th Parade in the Pink Line of Dunwoody, just for the record. And we're also signing on as a co-sponsor of the Soapbox Derby. Now, having said that, we're very happy to be able to participate with the committee that you appointed, Mr. Mayor, in coming up with the Adopt-a-Spot program in the first place. At this point, I think this is a good start to get into this, and we would simply ask that we be provided the opportunity to meet with staff and work through some of the issues and going forward on not only the ordinance, but some of the control mechanisms that are in this.
Okay. Any questions for
you might have,
Gordon? Pretty straightforward.
Thank you for doing
okay.
This.
Yeah, thank you, Gordon, and Bill, and the team that was on that, and obviously Richard. Next step, get together. And I'm not sure. I have no clue about when everybody gets together, what other pieces and parts or ideas. I know we've all bantered back and forth. So. I'm not, at this particular point, I don't want to have a second read or vote on this until we know what we're looking at as far as details on involvement. The initial discussion was this is a city-run program, but then there's a back engine to it on, whether rollout or watch guard or things like that. So I'm not sure, I'm not really clear if we're going to be prepared. And from what you're saying, Warren, we don't, if we're only passing an ordinance...
Let's pass the ordinance.
I'm not sure if, there's any reason to hold that up. So, again, I guess I'll lean on you guys to let me know, are we ready? Are we not ready? Again, the one thing that we have learned, if nothing else, is not to rush something if there is something in there that we're not...
Right.
We're going to look back and say, uh-oh, or it's not ready for prime time. So.
Yeah, the only thing I would say, I do know there's been a couple inquiries about wanting to move forward, a couple
sure.
locations,
yeah.
And I don't want to hold up.
No. I don't want to hold up. I just want to make sure we have it right. So you guys do your thing together, and please get back to me before.
We'll move forward with that. So I'll talk with Gordon.
Thank you.
Right now.
Okay. Any other questions? Any other questions?
I just think the thing that I really do think I was not very pro on this. I mean, you have no doubt about it. I think there's plenty of controls in there. I think the big question that probably would be put to us would be the fee level.
Right.
I think that'd be something that you kind of have to know. Putting this, changing.
What I envision right now is something similar to a fee structure for like a real basic plan review. I think right now with community development, some of this would be coordinated with community development because they would be doing a lot of this review. Is right now the basic minimum fee for a plan review is $325. I don't envision it being any more. That's probably what we're looking at for a fee level for that. And then the sign, we would have to price out with the sign, but it'd be around the $75 or $100 for the sign we'd be putting in. So, I mean, we're looking at something reasonable. We're not looking out to as a moneymaker. We just want to make sure we cover the cost of staff that's going to have to review the plans and cover the cost of the sign we're going to have to
put. That makes sense. And I think also we're looking, guys, if you kind of look at it, something exciting, it's you know, as you said, Tom, there's different aspects of it. You know, I go by with the weed eater and with the 10-foot tall weeds by the triangles on Chandler, Dunwoody, and Peeler. That's one thing. Or she said, I've been approached by local landscape architects, and I think people are lined up to think, hey, I'd love to get in on this. So it's good for something that really works. And we've seen what Bill Grant has done. It's been unbelievable, but, you know, absolutely exciting, great, good work. Y'all get together. Please get back to me, and we'll see if we're ready for prime time. With that, any other questions for Mr. Richard? Fantastic. Thank you. All right, Borough and status report, Warren.
Okay. I'm here for the monthly status report. And this shows the costs incurred as of April 30th, 2009. April, we spent $26,727. Cumulative costs as of April 30th are $505,789. And we are down to one project that they are working on currently, which is the build-out of the first floor of City Hall. Obviously, the second floor is completed, and half of the first floor is completed. So it's half of the first floor. Expected completion date around May 27th, with furniture installation being completed in the first few days of June. And that would be for both the council chamber court, excuse me, and the police area. And also attached with that is a report compiled by Boykin. What I would like to recommend is for your meeting on May 26th is to go ahead and provide the notice to terminate the contract as of June 30th. I think that will give us plenty of time to complete the construction project and any punch list items that may come with it. And again, I would remind the council as well that Boykin is only paid for authorized work by the hour. So if you don't use them, you don't pay a retainer fee or any other kind of fee, you just pay for what you use. So I think June 30th gives us the comfort that we'll have what we need by that point to terminate that relationship, and then we'll move forward from there. Be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions for Warren on this?
Warren, I should know this, but I can't remember what was the total cumulative cost that we put as a limit on this.
I think it was, I've got a contract with.
$575.
Other questions for Warren on that?
That number doesn't include the money that they paid for our staffing during December, does it?
Yeah, it does.
It does include that?
Yeah, we've already reimbursed them for all those months.
So that $505 that you've spent so far, that included the reimbursement portion of it?
It includes all reimbursements, any subcontractors that they employed for the city of Dunwoody. Excuse me. And also, you know, their fees going back to October.
Okay, any other questions?
Not just this fiscal year.
All right, we'll move on. Thank you very much, Warren. And, yeah, obviously, don't go anywhere. All right, April financial report.
Okay. It's my pleasure to present to you the April financial summary, and it's going to be more of my pleasure come next month, I believe, at this time. June 1st, we have hired a finance director. We're going to start on June 1st. His name is Chris Pike. Chris is a CPA with a Master's of Public Administration, bachelor's degree from Columbus State University. He's currently the Assistant Finance Director for the Greater Orlando Aviation Authority, which includes the Orlando Airport and also an executive airport in Orlando. Previous to that was the Finance Director for the City of Griffin and Finance Director for the City of Morrow. Wanted to get back to Georgia, and this will be the opportunity to do that. We did go through an extensive process. With some nationwide advertising for the position, attracted a lot of great applicants, went through a panel process after we completed some phone interviews. We interviewed six candidates using a five-person panel with some finance folks, some management folks, and some recruiters. Not any fee to the city, but just happened to be a recruiter on the panel. And then went from there, and we brought him back in for a second interview, and I gave a tour of the city and met with some additional folks.
We completed our background check and very excited about the results of our search. And Chris was given an email address today at 3 o'clock. He sent me his first email asking if he can get started on some projects about 3:30. So press release goes out tonight and tomorrow. And we're very excited to have him with us.
Good. Congratulations on that.
So this will be the last time, hopefully, that y'all hear from me on the financial report. Well, you always see Lisa somewhere in the background lurking. But the financial summary for April is still looking positive. I think the major areas that are in this report are still dealing with the business and occupational tax, the hotel-motel tax, and also starting to see some of the revenue coming forward from the municipal court. On the business tax, did want to hit that one. We are, as of today, at 965. And still continuing to climb. We have identified a number of issues that may have resulted in our late collections. And the two most pressing of that is that when we did the initial mail out, we left off everything that said Doraville, Georgia as an address, which, as you know, covers the east side of town by Peachtree Industrial Boulevard, Windsor Chapel. There's about 300 businesses that we missed sending them a little letter to. So we just sent that out in the last 10 days, and we're starting to get those in now. There's also a significant amount of businesses we think we had off of our mailing list that did not get contacted within the perimeter center area. We started to do our sweeps. That's a terrible word for it. We've started to do our research and contact some folks that may not be as timely in getting their license, and we're finding some excellent results by going building to building and finding folks that have either renewed with DeKalb, not renewed at all, or our businesses that have never been licensed. So we're starting to see the fruits of those labors and coming into the revenue. So I'm fairly confident at this point that we will come close to hitting the $2 million number that's within our budget. And as I said, right now we're just shy of a million, but the collection efforts are starting to pick up, and hopefully the grace period that y'all put into place will assist us in those efforts as well.
Do you have a process in place for communicating with DeKalb County? I know one person that sent their check in, as they've always done, to DeKalb County. Are they sending that money to us, or do we have a process for going and meeting with them and auditing their books or finding out who's paid that should have come to Denver?
Sure. That's one of the things we're doing currently, is meeting with them to try and come up with a formal process to recover revenue that was paid to DeKalb inadvertently. And the philosophy I've taken on this from a customer service standpoint is not to inconvenience the business that has paid something to somebody. It's not their problem, it went to the wrong place. So what we're trying to do in those instances is get them through our paperwork process and put them in a position where we can issue them the license and then recover the fees from DeKalb directly instead of DeKalb refunding the customer and the customer then coming and paying us. I think that's overly bureaucratic for what we're trying to accomplish. So the short answer is we're in the midst of establishing those processes now, but we're trying to do it in a way to put the customer first.
Thank you, Robert.
Because of the difficulty we had identifying those Doraville businesses and some of the ones at Perimeter Center, is it your opinion that we ought to look at extending the grace period again, just so that we get these folks in without, you know, if we didn't send them letters, I would feel awfully bad about charging them fees for being late.
At this point, I would say no, but I may come back with you as we get a little further into the process to see if that'd be necessary. Okay. We certainly don't want to harm anyone that, right, with good intentions, hasn't complied with our rules.
Okay. Any other questions for Warren?
Warren, I was looking back here at the debt service. I can find it again.
It's the last page.
Yeah, I just was trying to ascertain here if we are on track for putting away, I think it's in the neighborhood of $660,000, as I recall, for that. And you know, I see the fund balance here, the expenditures, the total debt service. Is that the amount we're actually putting away per month there? Can you
Sure. With that debt service fund, if you remember, y'all established this, I think, about a month or two ago. And what this fund is the collection of all of the capital dollars that we put into this year's operating budget that we intended to pay toward the first payment on the master lease that we signed with SunTrust. With BB&T. What ended up happening, as you can recall, is that the first payment isn't due until January of next year. So we took all of those capital funds and transferred them into this account so that next year when we need to make our payment on both the initial master lease with BB&T and the supplementary lease with SunTrust, that we have a large chunk of money to put toward that. So I think we're going to be about $300,000 short for January, but the estimate or the anticipation initially was in 2010 that we would have to budget $900,000 of new cash to put toward that. So we're 6/9 of the way toward doing that for next year. So all we'll have to do is budget $300,000 in cash instead of $900,000, and we'll use this chunk of money to help make that first payment.
On the police radios, it shows through April 30th, page 9. It shows no expenditures so far. Is that because of the capital lease, or is that because of the statement hadn't showed up yet? Because I know we have a police radio.
Actually, we've got a lot of loud officers, and they're just yelling to each other. But now we've got with that the radios were double budgeted. They were put both into the capital and into the operating expense. So you'll see in a future budget amendment that we'll move the money out of radios over there because it's been put into the capital program.
My last comment has to do with, maybe this in general is just, we've selected SunTrust. Everybody can read the paper. We all know what's going on. I just wonder, and I know we haven't had a financial director, but I would request that as soon as he kind of gets his feet on the ground, that maybe he sits down with SunTrust and they kind of give him where they are, how goes it with SunTrust, because I know they're right now they're going for a capital infusion. Brother, we want to make sure that it's our fiduciary responsibility to the citizens and their tax dollars that we are making sure that they're their stewards.
If I might say, our funds that are in SunTrust are collateralized through the state pledging pool at 110%, so regardless of what happens to SunTrust, there is collateral backing our money. So
I'm aware of that. I think that is a good backup, and I also think that in the long road of life, I think you should take a good look at them. I don't see that there's probably any problem, but I think it's something that you ought to be sitting down and getting a report back that says, hey, it's okay.
And I can advise you, I did do that probably about 2 months ago with our folks, and as soon as Chris gets on board, we'll revisit with them and get a little update on where they are as a bank.
Any other questions for Warren before we move on? Yes, Robert?
Just for the sake of the local press, we are still running ahead on revenue and behind on expenses, and we do still expect to meet or exceed our revenue targets for the year.
Yeah, and my conversation earlier today with the press, I made sure that was...
Very good. I just want to make sure that we have this, the opportunity for good news.
Don't let that get lost in the
minutia. The question was asked about 3 hours.
Well, and I already had the answer, too. I just want to make sure that we didn't miss
the opportunity. Any other questions for Warren? We're going to move on.
Good. Great job.
Just a comment on
SunTrust, if I might. They're into us a lot more than we're into them, and I think we ought to keep that in mind, and we're fortunate to have them as our banker, and we need this to, what I would encourage that your CFO to do is to meet with them to make sure that next year that line is going to continue to be available if we need it to operate.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right, we're moving on. Thank you, guys. Federal stimulus program update.
This was a request of council to update the city council on the status of our efforts to recover some of the stimulus funding that may be available to local governments. And asked Tanya Jackson, who's our project manager and budget director, to head up our efforts to coordinate between the departments. She's done a good job here of putting together a summary of the programs that we're after currently. Daily we get emails and other updates from different state agencies and and other entities advising us of opportunities, and we're also searching those out. And I think the philosophy for the city is that, you know, we didn't vote to create the stimulus program, but if there's an opportunity for the city to recover some of those funds locally, that we would go after whatever we can. There is an approach issue to grants, which I'll share with you, and this is universal. My thoughts on grants are they're great for capital projects and operating projects and ongoing needs. You really have to take a very careful look at. As you notice in here, and I'm going to let Tanya present, we do have one item dealing with the burn grant for hiring. And that's something that I think that we would take a careful look at. But my philosophy also is apply for the grant, get awarded the grant, and then turn it back if it's not something that you, in the end you want to do. But if you're not in the game at the beginning, then it's not your choice at the end. So that's part of the reason that we're going after some of these funds. And as we go in through our careful review process, we may not come back to y'all at some point and say, we got, you know, 11 officers.
Right.
We may not need all 11, so here's what our plan is going forward. I'll let Tanya kind of summarize quickly the rest of the memo. We'll both be available to answer any questions.
Thanks.
And Chief is here as well.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor, Honorable City Council members. For the record, my name is Tanya Jackson, Budget Director for the City of Dunwoody. What you have before you this evening is a memo that summarizes some of the efforts that City of Dunwoody is currently engaged in or either looking into with regards to funding for under the 2009 federal stimulus package. The first five bullets midway the page pretty much summarize the stated purposes of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. We refer to as ARRA. Within the body, what I've done is I have incorporated a summary of the activities. One, the first bullet that we're actually engaged in our public works department is competitive service transportation program. Under that program, I've worked with the public works director, Mr. Richard Meehan, and we have put together what he actually has done, which summarizes the local resurfacing project, what we are eligible for. It is actually eligible for funding in the phase two process with GDOT. It is one of those projects that's being evaluated and ranked locally, and it's based on competitive based on the severity of the conditions of the road and paving requirements. The city's total funding request for this project is approximately $750,000, and there is a summary, if you would like to receive that Mr. Meehan can provide for you if you like to see the details that outline that budget. The second bullet speaks to COPS, public safety. Under the ARRA, the total funding that's allowable will be a $1 billion. I actually provide details about, you know, the community-oriented policing services. It provides 75% of the new hires. The details here are traditionally what they will fund us for. And again, as Mr. Huckmacher has expressed, we have gone after and submitted a COPS grant, which is requesting funding for 11 new officers for the Dunwoody PD, which totals about $1.4 million approximately. Under this particular grant that we submitted, it will be fully funded the first 3 years, and the fourth year the city would have to fund for salary and benefits for this grant, and that's a part of the requirement for that. In addition to that, I have been in communication with Congressman Tom Price's office, more specifically with Mr. McGowan, and he has actually shared a great deal of information with me regarding the GFA grant for energy efficiency. And he has also pledged his support and the support from Congressman Price's office with regards to supporting the City of Dunwoody with any grant searching efforts that we may have. And I will be continuing to have dialogue with him regarding other opportunities other than the GFA grant that with regards to the stimulus funding. The last two bullets will identify some of the other energy efficient initiatives of which we have not actually submitted grants for, but replacement of existing incandescent traffic signals with LED signals, in addition to traffic signal timing and coordination. And I am working with Mr. Meehan to kind of put together our efforts on that with regards to the types of grants that we will be looking into and going after. Do you have any specific questions? Is there any additional information that I can provide for you?
Who's, just out of curiosity, who's the, what are you, the grant guru that then funnels down to department heads and to Tanya, or how is that process?
I mean, obviously, I take the overall accountability for, sure, for everything that happens right, that goes wrong. Take credit for some of the stuff to make it right. But what I've asked is Tanya to head up our efforts on this behalf, so she really is the key point person that we have going forward on this.
So when procedural, I'm just interested because Warren's right. I know all of us, or I know I get a ton of email, and I forward every single one to Warren. Should I start forwarding those to you, or Warren, do you want
to? You send them to me, and I'll send them to Tom.
Okay, and you probably get 80% of them before I send them anyway. But my question would be, what do you use, just, to, again, I'm not trying to delay this process, but I'm just curious. I know we're all, you know, it's the day of the free money, and we want to make sure we're in line for the giveaway. What process, are you just kind of, you know, something comes across your desk, and you, I guess you do a quick evaluation, would it be applicable for this new city, and then either throw it away into the trash, or pursue, or what do you...
Absolutely, Mr. Mayor. What I'm actually doing is I'm following the GMA guidebook. So even if I receive emails from Mr. Huttmacher or from some of my other fellow counterparts in other jurisdictions, I obviously go to this guidebook to see if that email will fall into the criteria that would allow us to be eligible to receive funding, or if it's going to be worth the effort to apply for it. So I am using the ARRA City Funding Book as a guide, and I do get emails. In addition to that, I'm actually doing a lot of research myself on the GMA website. There's a plethora of website links that take us to, you know, different funding sources. So it's not just GFA, it's not just GMA, and so I am really taking a front position on trying to see where we can actually incorporate some of the City of Dunwoody's needs into some of these grant opportunities.
Okay, wonderful. And then I guess with Richard and Jennifer, anything that they hear from their counterparts and
Absolutely, they have been wonderful about that, and we are communicating back and forth with updates on where we are.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you very much. That is encouraging to hear. Any other questions? Yes,
I just got one question. Is there anything we can do to help? I mean, most of this is outside the political influence, but we got friends in the state legislature. We got friends in Congress. Should we be calling people and bugging them to give us money, or should we let you guys take this?
I think at this juncture, where we are in the process, that there's not a whole lot to be done. Certainly, as we get through the grant application process and start to recognize who the players are, as to who's making the decision, and certain you know, grants are. You know, being administered by the federal government, and then most of them are being administered by state agencies. And there's a few that are a little bit strange, like the police grants are being done by the Criminal Justice Coordinated Council, which has a board that's appointed by the governor. So there are some opportunities to talk with some folks to express Dunwoody's needs, but at this point, not yet.
Okay. I'm sorry, Tom. We'll go to Tom.
Tanya, when you work with Kyle Gallen, remember, he's a Dunwoody resident, so he's a vested interest in some of this stuff getting through. Denny and I have been working for his weekend work.
He's been very helpful. He's been very informative, and he's as I stated, I think the positive things that he's going to work with us on is actual a letter of support for the city of Dunwoody for any grants that we actually move forward.
And I just got to throw this out because I caught this wording. I guess with a lot of these grants, it is all wording from what I understand from Price's office and things of that nature. But reading this about the officers, it says to hire new ones or to fill existing vacancies that are no longer funded in the city's budget. So I'm guessing if we cut Chief's budget by 11 officers,
yeah,
it won't go there when we go there.
Chief, I didn't ask you to say that.
You didn't get an opportunity.
One of the issues as well with the police grant, just to let y'all know on that, is there's 37,000 police officers have been requested so far from different local governments. This is funding for about 5,000, and they use criteria in that, such as demographics and other factors.
I hear you.
I'll let you speak to the cutting of 11 officers.
You may sit down if you wish. All right, so any other questions? Yeah, I'm sorry.
Danny. I just got, first of all, talking about the police grant, we just hired new officers. It's this year. First, let me go back. I'm not big on giveaway programs, period. But you know what? If they're going to throw the money out of it, we don't stand up to the plate. That's not pretty common. The new hires that we have hired, Chief, it's this year, this time frame. Do any of those could possibly fall underneath this program?
I don't think so, based on the reading of the grant. We talked, let me explain this maybe just to clarify a few things. We talked to the cops office about this grant. There was a JAG grant, Justice Assistance Grant, and that was based on your crime stats. And we didn't qualify because, according to their guidelines, you had to have 3 years of having crime stats, Part 1 crime stats. So DeKalb actually got that money, although we made an argument that we should get our share of it because we still had the crime here in Dunwoody. But anyways, this grant was strictly a hiring grant, and when we talked to the cops office, they told us that the determining factor that they're going to use to distribute this money is based on your poverty level, your unemployment level, the degree you've been hit by layoffs, budget shortage that you've had as a city, which really kind of knocked us all out, really. So we thought we would apply for these positions in hopes that we would get maybe one through the process. There was over 39,000 positions applied for, as Warren said, $8.3 billion requested. And they only have $1 billion, and they'll probably only fund about $5,000, according to the cops office. So that's kind of where that comes out.
Number two, on the LARP money, is that a straight-through grant, or is any of that matching funds that we have to provide money for to get the LARP money?
It's not LARP money. It's my understanding is that it's straight-through money. 100% funding, no matching money in there. The program that this is falling under, they're using the LARP criteria to rank the projects, and that's what the determining factor is. It's not the state LARP, but they're just using the LARP criteria because it's similar. It's projects that are basically what would be LARP projects or large scale LARP projects. So, but it's 100% funding, no match money at all.
What's the cost to pay 1 mile or 2 lane road these days?
Ballpark, way out there. I think the numbers I was given for just the asphalt alone is around 200,000 per mile. It's about 100,000 per lane mile is the ballpark. Now with Chamblee Dunwoody, we're actually talking about doing, because of the pavement condition it's in, we're talking about doing a lot more than just going out and resurfacing. There's milling involved, there's heavy duty patching. There's some major pavement reconstruction in some areas that we're going to be doing under this. That's why the cost is up there. I believe the section's a little over 3 miles, I believe, is what we were looking at, or somewhere around 3 miles for the segment.
Right. The last question is for kind of you, Warren. You know, when we had a meeting with Sandy Springs, they got a call, and they said, by the way, the energy grant, your share is $850,000. They had not even put in for it. They got a call and said, your share of the energy grant is $850,000. And I just throw that out there, and because they didn't have any idea it was coming. It just kind of blindsided them. So I just, maybe we just man the phone, maybe they'll call us. We don't know.
One of the discussions that I had with Mr. McGowan pretty much related directly to that. What was the criteria, and that I was aware that Sandy Springs had been awarded or eligible, or stated they were eligible for the $850,000. It was my understanding from Mr. McGowan that there was a submission actually from Sandy Springs, and that the reason that the city of Dunwoody was not on the list to be even considered, I guess, is because we had not been established at the time. So what he has, what he stated that he would do is he's going to look into whether or not all of that GFA funding under which that $850,000 for Sandy Springs was designated, if there is any residual that remains that we may be able to benefit from. So I am scheduled to meet, well, to speak with him again this week regarding whether or not there is anything available, and I would be more than happy to provide an update on that.
Just to give you a quick update on that, Sandy Springs, they applied for that after they were told that
they were going to get it. Okay.
And then they wrote it.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Nice work. All right. Discussion of ordinance to amend Chapter 2. Brian?
Well, last meeting, the council desired to appoint some non-residents to our advisory committees. In front of you, you've got two different versions. One is that it strikes it so that the mayor can establish the qualifications. On the backside is a secondary proposal that requires the member either to be a resident of the city of Dunwoody or an owner or an officer of business domiciled in the city of Dunwoody. That would be a stakeholder. So these are two various proposals for you guys to consider.
Okay, let me start it off. One, any questions for Brian? If there are none, let me start it off and just suggest for time purposes, and then again if there's issues, but I would suggest that we use numero 2, which is the one on the second page, and I think that gets done. Danny, you brought up great concerns about residency. I think they're very valid. Yet I think it looks like we're covered with the owners and the businesses and people that are stakeholders. Any other discussion we want to have on this? All right, hallelujah. All right, let's move to next page. Comprehensive plan. Jennifer.
Yes, thank you very much. You have two discussion items before you. One item, but two different pieces of the discussion. And let me promise you at this hour, we're not going to go blow by blow through 150 pages of statistics. What I'd like to accomplish here tonight is to present this document to you for discussion, understanding that it is a draft. There are some rough portions of it. There are some pieces that will need to be filled in, and it will be refined before it comes back to you for a vote next Tuesday. At that Tuesday date, we'll also have a public hearing. I'd like you to start getting comfortable with this information so that you can pass that resolution on Tuesday so that we can submit to the state and start our public participation program on time. With that, I'll turn it over to Michelle Alexander to detail a little bit further information.
Welcome back.
Thank you. It was about a month ago, I guess, I was here to kick off and explain the process of the comprehensive plan, and we're very pleased to hit the first benchmark, which is the public hearing, where we present the findings, key findings of the community assessment, and we also present the participation plan formally. And that gives the schedule so all folks can be aware of the activities and when there are meetings going to be held. I do have a PowerPoint presentation. I will come next Tuesday with a screen as well so that we can set up and have that PowerPoint available. I thought we were in the other room, so I apologize. But maybe you're happy because it's a long night, so you're like, get one free. Just a couple items to touch on I want to highlight. What we will, just to prepare you for Tuesday, that we will run through primarily the key maps. in the document of the community assessment to graphically demonstrate some of the key features of the city and just some of the key tables that emerge. What we're looking from you in particular are the section called Issues and Opportunities. And in that section, that is a preliminary list. So the point is, we've gone through some data. Here is what somebody who's not a council member, someone who doesn't have a particular interest, goes through and identifies issues and opportunities that jumped out. And you, we're looking forward to comments on that just based on the data and based on what the data says. Through the community agenda, that list gets refined and improved and then helps go through and establishes priorities for what kind of policies then based on the issues and opportunities that have emerged. We did receive a couple of questions, and I didn't know if we want to go ahead and just respond to some of the comments I got by email from council members. Jennifer forwarded on. I want to say thank you very much to Jennifer and to Richard, and also the chief and other folks we've tapped into to verify some of the data and to make sure what we were seeing made sense. One of the questions had to do first and foremost with the population. And the census data that came out. We do spend some time in the document explaining the source of that. DCA requires that we use sources that they authorize, so the census or data that DCA itself has. DCA uses Pools and Woods, so their primary data, I went to and got a secondary set of information, a secondary set of data to confirm what we were seeing from the census data. We used a purchased database, a purchased service, because it is based both on census data. It'll have the base data of census, and it gives us 2008 data based on things like zip code, marketing research, permit data, and another series. So we thought the value for the city would be you'd get more recent information that supplemented the data from the census. So you still get the 2000 data. We're meeting the letter of the law that DCA requires. We use, but we're also giving you information that's more current. So that's just a brief comment. So because this might be too much information for some of you, but we did get a question about how the census blocks and the tracks of how we use that information. One of your census tracts doesn't fall neatly within the boundary of Dunwoody, so you're going to have to make, whoever the user is going to say, well, it's 23%. No, it's 25%. How much of a percent is within the city of Dunwoody is going to be a variable then. So even within census, for example, I found a table and it had five people difference. It's a 2000 table. It was one table in one section of the census and another table in another section of the census, and it had a difference of five people. So someone can pull down the census block data, and we had a difference between that information from one of the council members and ours was 47 people. And if you've dealt with demographics, especially looking at policy level, where you're happy, if you're within about 600, 1,000, you're feeling like you're doing great, 47 seems to be within the realm of acceptability. But that was just to explain that one point that came up in one of the emails. The other point for using ESRI and maintaining the consistency for some of the other data is to have consistency within your document when we talk about different households. If I did my own analysis on the census, but then I pulled some other information, you might end up having two different population numbers because I'm using different sources. And if we use ESRA, they're going to have the same base source for the base population, so at least internally the document will have consistency. So that's the rationale for the approach we took on the method. We also compared against ARC. I did a lot of work with that because they spend so much effort at ARC to pull in information, and they come up with an employment forecast, and they come up with a population forecast. When I used their numbers, they were about 3,000 different than the numbers I was generating. So I discarded it. It didn't confuse anyone. I did not even include that data here. I do have it for those of you who, like me, are data geeks and like to get into the details. I can provide memo and backup information on that. I'm happy to do that. I didn't want to include another source in here to confuse any readers. but we can include it if you want that in the technical addendum. They might not get noticed in 177 pages. So the organization of it, we put in front an executive summary type section where we just pick out the highlights. On one or two sections, we include some snapshots to kind of have some of the data jump out that we assume would be salient for folks. And then most of the maps and most of the details, though, are in the technical agenda. Like I said, when we come to the public hearing, we'll present some of that. I also brought some large maps, and Jennifer, I'm going to give them to you tonight so that folks can be aware that if they want to see the large maps, even if they have good printouts and they can print out or they have great computer screens and they can see the maps nicely, they might rather have the life-size, so we're going to have a couple of those, especially the character area maps and the map of areas of special attention. So those two maps will be available, and we also printed the zoning map, where it's a colored zoning map now that we prepared for you, so you can easily identify visually what your zoning districts are. There was another question we received regarding some employment data. One of the maps we provide details out where you have concentrations of employment numbers. We used ARC data for that, where they're projecting out and make estimates about concentrations of employment. And we did look up, there was a question about a large, it looked like there was a more than 2,000 employees in the area around Tilley Mill. And we did look that up in the GIS data. This is geographic information system, so it's mapped out, but we have database underlying that map. This was saying to us that it's the Georgia Pacific Corporation. Does that make any sense?
Doesn't make any sense.
Does not make any sense.
That makes no sense. If you look at that map, that's a residential neighborhood, and you've got the highest density of employment in the middle of this single-family home residential neighborhood. There's something wrong there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's what we can do. We can check the source on it. Because we're the security. I haven't done
it. Were these questions from council?
They were forwarded to Jennifer. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I had looked at them.
Well, not sure. I made that assumption.
Yeah, right. I had made some notes. And we don't have to go through all of these tonight.
Okay.
Mostly these are just me looking at stuff and going, that doesn't look right. You might check that. We don't
and
have to go through
and all. And that's the process, the public hearing, garbage in, garbage out, right? So this is with the more eyes on it, the more refined it'll be.
Absolutely. And Robert,
so we appreciate that.
Is very detailed and data and catches.
Yeah, yeah, yes. Really. I assumed it was a draft document and I was trying to be helpful.
Yeah. And then, that's a big one. It's going to jump. If it jumps on it, it'll jump on it others as well. So we want it to be as accurate as possible. I'm going to leave it at that and just leave it open to questions if you had any.
Any questions?
First of all, this is a good first cut. I did go through it.
Okay.
And I think it's a very good first cut.
Excuse me.
You're comfortable with the 43,000 population number that you had in there?
Yes, if there are questions about it, like I said, when I looked at others, for example, the ARC, they had about 3,000 folks fewer, and that was because at their base data, though, at the 2,000 base data,
right.
And given the number of, permits and development, this seemed to be a reasonable amount, but if there is other evidence to the, to the contrary, we can investigate that further.
One of the things that you, I went through your little boxes where you said don't have right now. A lot of the things that we do in the cities, I expanded on earlier, is done by volunteers and by 501c3 organizations, nonprofit organizations. One of those being history and preservation.
Yes.
And you've got that marked that we don't have that within the city. We have that within our 501c3 organizations, and I personally don't envision having an operation in the city of Dunwoody to perform that function.
As a commission to review historic preservation.
We have that. We have that as a part of the Dunwoody Preservation Trust.
Part of the trust is that role.
And that's kind of the role they play in. They've identified historic properties. They put properties on the historic register, the National Historic Register. All those kind of things are done, again, by nonprofit organizations.
And the only reference would be if there was a government body that conducted reviews.
It is within the state, but not within the city of Dunwoody.
And that's where you have to identify if it exists in the city as part of your development review process. So DCA will say, do you have a body that reviews plans for historic preservation and regulations at the locally adopted level?
Yeah, it was never reviewed by DeKalb County, and it was always just taken directly to the state for those kind of things.
Okay. Any other?
I just want to ask one question. I noted with interest that the projection is that the percentage of the population that's over 65 is going to double from about 13% to about 26%.
Following trends.
Right. That's my question is, how does that compare with the other surrounding areas? Are we going to be a point, yeah, right, all of us. By the time this thing is, by the time we get there, each and every one of us will be in this population. Are we graying faster than the surrounding areas, or is this just a representation of the general population of Atlanta?
I need to look that up to give you exact. As a whole, Atlanta isn't experiencing as much as the rest of the country.
Right.
That change, I should have in here reference of your surrounding, for example, what DeKalb County compares to, so I could make sure it's more prominent. If it's not in there, I can't give you the quick answer.
Okay.
All right. All right. Any other?
Just that the Atlanta. I know there was 1 in 5 was some of the numbers tossed out in the ARC region during the aging through the aging division there, and 1 in 5 was a number for looking out 30 years from now.
So it's interesting, but, Robert, like on your thought too, if we're using just general trends, right, if you're just using a common trend, like if you look at the Business Chronicle,
right,
the by zip code, it will tell you the average age,
right.
So, you know, it's interesting. You can even almost do your own.
Well, and we're going to be 1 in 4, so.
Very productive 1 in 4, though. I'm
here. That's right. All right.
Thank you. Any other questions? All right, we'll move on. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's a great job.
It's not too late to back out of this either. If you look at what time we go on. I know last time
was maybe away, you know, like, what works?
That's final warning. Consider that. Okay, thank you very much. And presentation of lights off, power down. Are we still doing that, or was that PowerPoint? This is all right.
This is a totally separate item.
Okay.
I thought that maybe we're going to turn the lights off and go home.
Well, that's essentially what this policy is. This is one of the many items we'll be bringing in front of you this year in our quest to qualify for ARC certification as a green community. This is a policy that, per the program, is mandated to be adopted by council either by resolution or ordinance. We're taking the path of ordinance. And essentially, this is a policy that says if you use it a lot, turn it off when you're not using it. If you don't use it a lot, unplug it. If you have any questions,
I'd be
happy
to answer. Sounds very simple to me.
Yeah. So, I'm not even going to enforcement of this. We don't have little security cameras around. I mean, I guess if we pass an ordinance, it's just it's like anything else.
We're strictly talking about functions of government. So,
right.
People working in City Hall and Police Department, this will apply to them. We're not going to be going into office buildings or retail stores and making sure they've unplugged a coffee pot.
Okay. So you walk into my office at City Hall, and what do I get, a citation if my computer's not unplugged? I'm just I do have a lock, by the way. As I understand, I haven't tried the key yet. But Warren's got a master lock. Okay, any questions for Jim? All right.
That's great.
Easy enough.
I like those.
Yeah.
Okay. Now we're on another...
Outdoor light.
All right,
Jennifer. No.
It's
only text amendment.
So, yeah, only text amendment for an outdoor light efficiency ordinance.
Yeah.
Here we are. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Thank you. This next item is also within the world of sustainability and the quest for certification toward the end of the year. This item is a request to initiate a text amendment to the zoning code to include language on outdoor lighting efficiency. This has been presented to the Sustainability Commission, and they are still considering the draft presented to them, so they're in support of the concept, but the language is still being drafted. This is an ordinance that should move forward through the process. We do recommend it be placed in the zoning code rather than other developmental regulations. That's how a lot of our neighbors do it. Mm-hmm. And Roswell has a code that I'm familiar and have used. And a couple of our surrounding jurisdictions use a model ordinance created by ARC. And the thing that we prefer as staff in this ordinance and why it is preferred by the Atlanta Regional Commission is it's not the language of direct your light elsewhere and don't cause your neighbor to have harm. These are numbers. They're measured with meters. It's a definitive line. If you comply or you do not comply, it's less in the eye of the beholder. So should council find that you're supportive of the concept, staff will then consider writing the language and start the text amendment process, which would conclude with a second reading by council in August.
Okay. All right. Any questions?
I'm supportive of the concept, and I'd like us to direct staff to go ahead and give us something to look at.
Yeah. Any other comments on that? All right. Thank you. Okay, now we're on the text for zoning category for land use for public services and facilities.
Yes, this is a conversation that's been occurring among staff, the city attorney, and I believe some council people as well, that we do have a significant amount of property in the city limits that is owned and used by the county. And as long as it's being used as a county facility, it's exempt from our local zoning regulations. However, somewhere in the horizon, should that property ever not be a community facility run by the county, our local zoning regulations would then take effect. So if it is zoned R100 and it turns over to private property ownership, they could then develop that property compliant with R100. Should it be C1, et cetera, et cetera. So should the council be supportive of this idea, staff could draft a text amendment, which would create a new zoning category that would be called something along the lines of public facilities or services, where we would designate the use as appropriate on that property are county public services, and create a zoning designation to that means. It would be a safeguard, so should the property ever become privately owned, if someone wished to do something privately with that property, they would need to come to this council for rezoning.
Okay, great. I'd make the suggestion that staff immediately...
Can I ask a question about that? Can we make a distinction between various types of use? In other words, what I'm looking for is parks, right? If there are park land that the county is using as park land, I'd like us to designate it as park land so that any other use would require us to do something affirmatively. And you know, again, I don't want them to decide that there's some other use that meets their needs, like a police station or a fire station or maybe a truck depot for repair of trucks or something. Can we put that in there too?
Certainly. We've been mulling this over. We haven't put pen to paper yet. We were waiting for initiation. Okay. But this could come forward to you in a couple of different versions. One would be a district that lists multiple uses in some language that says, what you are now is what you are. Or we could create separate districts to qualify. This is a police precinct, this is a park, and create multiple jurisdictions,
right.
Designations.
So right.
Losing my speech.
Cool. Excellent. Yeah.
Good point. Yes. And I guess just for my own clarification here, the whole idea here is that you've got somebody that currently owns somebody, we won't know who they are, we won't mention that, but if they would decide to try to do something with this, we would say, yeah, go ahead, but as soon as you do, here's what it's going to be designated as. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So it's only applicable to the next party, correct?
That's correct. There's nothing we would do here that would limit the county as long as they're using it as a public facility.
All right, any other questions, Jennifer, on this one? All right, we'll move on. Outdoor seasonal sales and permitting options.
Did we give them direction? We did, right?
Yes, I did. All right.
This was an item requested by Mayor and Council at our last public meeting on Monday. The request was to hit two different points, which I believe we've hit in this memo. And the first point is to clarify, under the current structure of our zoning code, what are the choices of how we permit things? And we run the full gamut of things are allowed by right, you come in and get your building permit, or you're allowed to do that use, and you're out the door without asking permission from anybody. And then we have a couple of different shades of various permitting until you get to the maximum intensity of permitting, which would be a special land use permit, which would follow the same as a rezoning process, which is a couple of months of public hearings and eventually a vote by mayor and council. So that first section really just details the levels of review and the boards that are reviewing them. The second portion of the request is a little bit more of a discussion of, quite frankly, why we're having some challenges right now. And as I reflected upon why Farmers Market caught fire, my opinion is that I think part of the challenge at this point in the game is that as council looks to make law and change zonings and deal with the day-to-day things in front of you, you are to be relying on your long-range policy as your guide of what the community wants. We legally have that, but it hasn't been crafted by our community. So as you guys are reviewing these requests, and should they become controversial, it's challenging to determine what is the majority consensus, what is the vision of the future. So staff's recommendation is that as we tackle this issue and issues like this, that we hold making major policy changes until we complete this comprehensive planning process so that you then have a community vision and majority voice of what the community is looking for as you encounter controversy. If you'd like to take action before that point, we also have some recommendations of changes we could make to the code today that may address some of the concerns that came up in the farmers market process. And if you'd like me to go into those further, I'd be happy to do so. In the interest of time, I'll just open it to questions.
Questions for Jennifer? I would also, okay. Well, let me start off, Danny, just to, my recommendation would be, Jennifer's recommendation, we're doing the plan now. I don't expect, if there are only so many farmers, I mean, in all honesty, so I'm not quite sure doing this is really something we should tackle now. So I'll throw that out, Danny.
I just think, number one, I was talking to a couple of people that do this quite a ways, and you all know who they are. They live here. But there was one of the comments from one of them was just be very, very careful, because anything you make on a decision will be extra hard to try to change later on down the road, because other people will come in and say, you set a precedence, and therefore we can go on down. What I would recommend, Ken, is that, you know, on some of the issues that they see that are very, you know, not just the farmer's market, but going through here and saying, you know, wow, I didn't know that was in there, that maybe you might want to advise us of those and say, you know, here's something maybe you better look at, or you might want to look at, you know, pending the comprehensive land use plan production. There's probably some other issues in here that I think there are probably little gotchas that you would know much better that are gotchas than I would. So that's what I would recommend, that they would go through and just come up
sure.
with a handful of things. That
I agree. If there's anything that
we can say yay or nay. Yeah.
So basically what I hear you saying then is maybe look for holes.
Yes.
And let us know.
Yeah, I'm not just talking about the farmer's market.
Right.
I'm just
talking about other
holes that you could say,
I know that's an easy task. So just
that was my best poker face. So
we're not expecting to read it. All right, that's I like that. So be on the lookout. How about that?
I understand the intent of where you're going. Anytime we can see the potential for the issue catching fire, we will try to make you aware of that as quickly as possible.
Okay. Any other comments to Jennifer here on this, Robert? No. All right. And I think we're moving on to this door-to-door salesman resolution. All right. Any staff comment on this? Brian, or I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But that's fine. You don't have to have one. We can discuss it. It's pretty straightforward.
It's just a fee. However, I would caution that if we do do a fee for a door-to-door salesman, I would hope that the council takes into consideration you have the Girl Scouts who perform these type of activities.
That's
you have the Boy Scouts.
Yeah,
sure. You got other types of groups doing it, and I don't think that was taken into account in the actual proposal that I read.
I want to consider those activities to be really my caution.
That's what the clarification I wanted. Came Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, and then high school fundraisers, and then I thought about not-for-profit,
yes, right,
selling the Welcome Dunwoody Police for the soapbox car, and I just started getting business. So we
need to take a look, good look at the ordinance to see if those groups are exempted from having the permits or not.
Okay, then given that, is there anything, should you guys mind if we throw it back at them? We're not ready for this. Yeah. Does anybody have an objection to this?
No, I think I just had one question, and I used to get bid on this. Can you make a differentiation between nonprofits and profits?
In this situation.
I think they are excluded in terms of solicitations door-to-door one way or another.
I think we did exclude them.
But we'll take a look at that and get back.
Okay, yeah, please do.
I seem to remember, my brain seems to remember more than my eyes seem to find it.
Okay, well, we're going to throw it back and we'll get
Brian.
It
again.
Yeah. Yeah. A couple of things. One, I guess probably the guys that come through my neighborhood the most on a Sunday morning when I've already gone to Mass on a Friday, Saturday afternoon, some of these religious organizations come through there peddling their wares. I don't know how we filter these things, but quite frankly, I think less is a lot better than more in terms of people that get these kind of permits. I don't particularly want
to... That would be very difficult to do, is to allow Boy Scouts, yet not allow religious organizations.
It's for-profit only commercial transactions, not meant to regulate charitable, political, or other nonprofit purposes.
So we're really, who would this affect? I mean, I can't even.
This affects your
magazine sales.
Magazine salesmen.
But aren't they under the auspices of nonprofit, at least the ones?
Not necessarily. All of them are.
Newspaper.
Yeah. There still are newspaper door-to-door salesmen. There are kids.
Vacuums.
Someone came to my door about a month ago.
Encyclopedias.
Omaha State.
Encyclopedias, you know.
Absolutely. So.
Okay, well.
There are still remnants of the old door-to-door salesmen walking around selling.
Well, this would be applicable for for-profit only, so this wouldn't get rid of any of the religious.
No Girl Scouts would be affected by it.
No Girl Scouts, no boys.
We did one problem a couple of months ago. DeKalb made a lot of arrests in Dunwoody North in that area. For people going around saying they're collecting for the football team trip, these guys are 25 minutes.
Well, that brings up another issue, Tom, which I think is really valid. I mean, how do you know? You're right. I've had more than our share as well. People coming by going, you don't
should have a permit.
28 years old. You don't play football for anything.
That's what it is. They would have to. The ones that are for profit have to acquire a permit. If you don't have a permit, you better not be a for profit. And I guess it all depends on persons like yourselves who are opening the door for these people who start questioning the situation and call the Dunwoody Police Department to investigate.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But would religious organizations have a permit?
No, they're non-profit.
They don't need
one. Non-profit, and they're excluded from this door-to-door sales and solicitation.
Okay. I mean, somebody coming up and...
Buying. Yes, it always happens. And if you or anyone suspects that there's always a call you can make to the Dunwoody Police Department to investigate this particular organization, but... we rely on them to up front to be truthful, and then if we find out they're not, we come at it the other way.
Well, I'm okay. Sensitive to this. I've sent my way through college as a door-to-door wig salesman.
We are moving on.
All right,
I shouldn't even add this, but this may be quick. I've got handouts for everybody, and I faxed it in to everybody. You probably couldn't read it.
We all got a copy of the same newspaper that you got this out of. We all got
it. Robert, you probably the only one that read it. Anybody else read it?
I did read it.
Well, then you all seen the picture.
Yep.
But, and so much that, the article was interesting, but more the picture brought up the thought, let's get some signage directing down to City Hall. Does anybody have any discussion? My thought is to use, I don't want to make this into a friggin' another branding campaign and get a committee and let's come up with a design. City seal on a nice post like this top picture with something along those lines. Give it to Richard and have Richard come back with some ideas.
With a price, right.
Y'all cool with that?
Yep. Yep.
Is Richard left? Richard, I'm going to give you the original, my friend.
I didn't see the original. The version that came to you on email was not that good.
Right.
No, well, that's what I meant. But.
Yeah. Okay. So the only thing I will, the only thing with where City Hall is being a PCID, we might have to run this, make sure that we're not. I think they'd be open to us, but we just need to make sure whatever design we come up with is compatible with theirs.
It's our city, Richard.
It's our city. We want to work with them. Not as a blessing, but as a...
Yes, right. No, I don't disagree. We want it to aesthetically look good, and I certainly... what I would ask of you is bring it back to me. Do your research. I'll take the initiative to talk with Yvonne at the right time, but I don't want... You know what I mean? Let's do our thing. But just see if you can come up with it. Okay, great. That's easy. AEDs, I think everybody is on the same page. I don't think we have to play with it. I don't think we need to see. Yeah, pass that out, absolutely.
I just like to make, just...
Yes, let me call on...
I'm not going to read it. Everybody here kind of knows I talk too much anyway, so...
Everybody's here.
Everybody's
here.
Everybody's
here.
Everybody's here.
I'm not saying
that.
You're right. And we only got two people.
So I sent this to everybody. Denny Hughes has got a copy. This is the color version. I just had it printed out.
Yeah.
If anybody wants one, I'll be happy to give it to them. Just real quickly, I did have a conversation or an email conversation with Councilman Shortle. I've already given a copy just to Dick for next week's crier. First of all, everything is pending upon... I'm not kicking off anything or doing anything until the council gives it the nod that they're in favor of doing it, even though I don't think legally I have to get your permission to do it. But I want this to be fully cooperative, everybody on the same page, and I think we basically are. But I did have a conversation with Councilman Shortle about the line in here, about the why they weren't in the first place. And I actually believe the fact that we noticed that they weren't there as a result of the Chamblee incident 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago now, and that within 5 months, within a year, we're going to be fully staffed, what took Chamblee 10 years to get up and running. I think that's a major plus that the city is being proactive in what we're trying to do. An AED is a simple device. It's an electronic shock machine. It's what they use in emergency rooms. It's the same thing, only it's battery-powered and carried in every patrol car. There's about four major manufacturers in the country that do these things. The two leaders are Zoll and Philips Electronics. Both make models that are designed for patrol cars and first responders. They're rugged. They stand up to abuse that they will go through on these things. And the answer is why we need AEDs in the first place simply is because they save lives. Usually, which everybody assumes is a heart attack, in most cases it's a syndrome called sudden cardiac arrest. It's an electronic disruption of the beat of the heart. The heart gets confused, both ventricles start to pump at the same time, they contradict each other, and the heart just plain stops. An interesting stat that I think everybody has to be aware of on this thing is that sudden cardiac arrest claims the lives of over 250,000 people every year. And that's more than breast cancer, prostate cancer, AIDS, handguns, or traffic accidents in this country combined. It is the number one silent killer in the United States. As I said, it's not truly a heart attack, but often described as a heart attack. Some stats here, once you have a sudden cardiac arrest, only a defibrillator can restart the heart electronically, combined with CPR. Any AED program that the police chief would adopt would include full CPR AED training, because both are necessary to get going. And I already sat down with the chief and talked to him a little bit about this before. Just look at the stats. Over 600 victims a day in the United States. 75% of these attacks occur outside of hospitals. 50% occur without any prior symptoms at all. And that's what my wife suffered. She stood up and fell down. And that was simple as that. So I identify with that one. The chances of recovery decrease by 10% each minute the victim is on the ground without a heartbeat. So timing is critical. This is why the police department needs them and why they will become the first responders to this. Last week I told you the Cobb County EMTs have complained to me several times. We've got all this high-tech equipment in our fire trucks and our EMT vehicles, but we never get to use it because the time they get there, the patient is dead. And that's the harsh reality of what we're doing. And the ultimate stat is that 95% of the victims that suffer a sudden cardiac arrest die. That's a stat that we can change and change very quickly. And again, for the record, since it's being reported, it's going to be on there. I think this is important to do, and it's we're bottom line folks. We're concerned about the budget. We're concerned about the investments we make as a city. So what kind of investment is it? An investment that shows absolutely no return on the dollar. You won't see a penny of this money back as it comes through. It's an investment device that if you use it just one time, it's paid for itself 100 times over. It's an investment that buys us the most valuable thing known to man, and that's time and life itself. It's investment equipment that we hope we never have to use. Because the plan that I am suggesting, and I got an email from Councilman Wittenstein today that he's already talked to a corporation he's presenting. He already redid my deck that I think you all received copies of. As I have no desire or burning craving to be a chair of any committee. I will serve on the committee in any capacity the committee wants me to serve on. So this is not, I got enough people throwing stones at me, so I don't need somebody saying this is another power grab by Bob. So I will do what the committee wants, whatever the committee that we put together wants to do. But I envision this as going to every single civic group we have in the city. That includes the Dunwoody Homeowner Association, the local tennis clubs, the local swim clubs, the Ladies Auxiliary, the Dunwoody Garden Club, the Preservation Trust, and everybody to solicit their support and their action on this to help raise money, in addition to those organizations coming up financially with some type of contribution. The Dunwoody Homeowner Association right now is going to pretty spend whole bunches of money on supporting a soapbox derby. Preservation Trust, I know, has fundraisers, but everybody has that seed money that we can go forward. Another opportunity we have is to do what Robert's already going forward to doing, and that's going to corporations asking for matching funds. The police chief and the city, with their help, can go after grants for these. There's always some type of grant program out there. The chief also mentioned the fact that some of these AED devices may be part of the state contract, that the city could get these devices at a relatively cheap cost. I think this one single event, this one single effort, can unite every single group that we have in this city, and to do it very, very fast. This is the one gift that the citizens can give back to the city, and the one gift that citizens can give back to all the citizens of Dunwoody, visitors, residents, and businesses. I kind of see it as, what better way to celebrate the anniversary of our first year in the city? What better way to celebrate Christmas? What better way to celebrate Hanukkah? And I think I spelled it right, didn't I?
I wouldn't have noticed.
Okay, I struggle.
Spelling is not my strong side.
The goal is, the estimated cost of these things, nobody ever pays retail, but on the books are about $1,500 a piece. You can get units from $1,000 to $1,800 and some really high-tech stuff that will keep people alive almost indefinitely. But it's an average of $1,500 to move forward with this stuff. I counted with the chief about 42 pieces of rolling stock in the city that I think should have this thing. I think even if Warren has a car, he should have one. And anybody who's related to the city should have one of these in their vehicle. And I also allotted for four, two at the city hall and two at the police station. The goal of these things, when I put these in at Marist, was to be able to walk from the site of the incident to the AED and walk back to the victim within 3 minutes. That's the goal. When you have a survival rate decreasing by 10%, every minute, you don't have a whole bunch of time on your side to do this. We want to do this now, and I want to do this now as we go forward. And if we can get every single person in the city of Dunwoody to contribute $1, every head of family contributing $1 for every member of his family, you pay $1 to contribute to the presidential elections if you so desire on your income tax form. That's 43,000 people, according to the last information we just heard. We have some 2,000 businesses in this town. If we go to each business and ask them to do it, they can help do that. I envision a sign or a poster or a plaque, similar to they have at most fundraisers, either at schools, private schools, for those contributors who've contributed to that, however long that list may be, have levels of sponsorship, including a company who may want to buy one and specifically have that named for his company, donated to the police. And then there's a little bit of fiction and fact down here. Stereotype for sudden cardiac arrest is male, and the fact of the matter is, it's male or female. It knows no gender. That the age everybody's going to do this is going to be old. When Marist thought about doing this, they said, yeah, we got to put them in the rectory where all the old priests live. You know, I didn't think priests ever suffered like this, but the fact of the matter is, it can happen to kids, wives, children, anybody can have these things as we go forward. stereotype is that people are overweight, they smoke, they have high cholesterol, they don't exercise, and the fact of the matter is there's often no risk factors involved at all. My wife is 43 years old, played tennis 4 days a week, had maybe 2 glasses of wine a week, and never smoked, yet she was struck with sudden cardiac arrest. Everybody assumes, because it's like a heart attack, that you're going to have chest pains, you're going to get dizzy, you're going to get the sweats, you're going to feel bad, and then you're going to need this device. And the fact of the matter is, there are no precursors, there are no symptoms. It can be struck by a kid being hit in the chest with a baseball and disrupting the heartbeat that way, as somebody simply standing up to say hello to their neighbor. So I don't know what the next step is, and I'll leave that to the wisdom of the council as we go forward. I'd like to get, maybe by next week when you have that, just an authorization or a proclamation, wherever you guys word this, to give the go-ahead. And then my next step would be to reach out to the Chamber of Commerce, to reach out to the PCID, and to reach out to the Dunwoody Homeowner Association as the base group to try to get names and addresses and phone numbers for all these organizations to get them to participate in this program. I think $75,000 by December in a community that's the size and the wealth of the city of Dunwoody for a project that knows it's not for the farmer's market or against the farmer's market. It's not for a high-rise building or against a high-rise building. It's not should we pave or should we not pave. This is an event that affects every single one of us in the city. And I'd like to see if we can get that done by next week. I'd be truly appreciative if we can move forward.
All right. Thank you very much, Bob. And any questions for Bob? I think...
No, should we direct staff to put a resolution together for us to act on next week?
Absolutely. I was going to have a discussion first. Okay. With Robert.
I'm sorry.
I'm of the sound mind that that Mr. Munson should be run like heck with this thing. Any objections here, or if you want to discuss it?
I think it's something that we should do with donations or fundraisers or whatever. And, you know, one of the things that I had, in fact, Mary came up with this a month ago. We discussed it with Robert. That, you know, give you a Dunwoody sticker for your car. That's three things. It gives you money for this, number one. Number two, it provides extra security. So it's police safe, if I live here or not. Number three, it shows community pride. The thing I took about it is, you know, about this, kind of not to mention it, but I'll mention it. You know, sadly, the answer is no. The question is, then we have these devices. Sadly, the answer is no. Chandler's been in business 100 years. We've been in business 5 years. I think that's a remark that doesn't belong in there at all. I mean, 5 months. So I don't believe that remark belongs in there whatsoever.
Okay. Any other discussion? Yes,
Danny. I got a call today and then an email from a young man who grew up in Redfield here in Dunwoody, and he went to Dunwoody High School and grew up here. He's in the business of this AED, and he gave me quotes, and he said it'd be a little bit poor for putting them in buildings because you got to build a box and things to put them in.
You buy boxes.
Yeah, right. But he gave me a quote of in quantities of 50. It would cost about $1,200 per instrument.
Well, let me just address that. The reason I want to keep this as an outside fundraising committee, and I don't mean this to be rude, but I don't really want any public input. I don't really want the council's input once we get started. I think this should be a community event, community program as we go forward. That being said, the man who's going to make the decision on these, what units we buy, is the gentleman sitting over there in the white shirt.
Now, I just want to give you the price point.
Yeah, I understand. And Phillips has already quoted me a price of $1,350. And there's a lot more to be considered than just buying the unit. You have to do the training that comes in and the equipment that comes in with it, including the boxes and the signs.
It's just another price point. All right, any other discussion? And
the chief's opinion about it, you know, as far as training is concerned, aspects.
I think the AEDs certainly are a wonderful, wonderful device, and I've been trying to contact some of the local agencies around to find out what brand they have and what brand they use, and so I'm in the process of doing that, but certainly having one in every car will be a great advantage, but certainly you have to have training.
Right.
And I'll just say, every manufacturer, there's no favor here, every manufacturer, if you buy that quantity of AEDs, will supply the training. The American Red Cross, American Heart Association, both train to be completely certified.
And there's also volunteers that could train, not certified, but train everybody in the city hall how to use one. They would be certified users like the police. But that's all part of the package when we get together that we share with the chancellor.
Absolutely. And a lot of it is online now. For those that choose to go that method, so it's not like old school. Plus, these new devices are, the whole intent is that a dude walking by can pick it up and tell you what to do, and you're able to do it, and you're not trained. So that's one of, not that we would want to be trained, these staff wouldn't. But anyway, you had me at hello, as but Robert
said. I'll tell you one thing about training on the AEDs. The city of New York, when they were testing their AEDs, did two focus groups. They took an AED and stuck in the room with six New York City Fire Department members when they first came out. They took the same AED and put it in the room with 9 and 10-year-olds, and with a dummy in the whole nine yards. They opened it up, put it into the room, and shut the door and said, okay, make it work. And the 9 and 10-year-olds got it to work before the police did, before the fire department. But the 9 and 10-year-olds did exactly what you said, Ken. They opened up the box. It told them what to do. They didn't question it. They followed the instructions, and bang, they got to work. Where the fire department guys sat back and were arguing with the lead, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. They overanalyzed it and actually slowed the process down. So they are intuitive when it comes to their operations.
They can handle the TV.
Okay, so yeah, we can put that on the
agenda. They can do anything.
Okay, we are very quickly going to break for where we're going to do public comment. Is there anybody that has a public comment card? Okay, we're going to break for executive session very quickly to speak of legal / real estate issues, I guess would fall under. So we're going... Yes. All right, there's a motion to executive session.
Second.
Second. All in favor, please say aye. Aye. Any opposed? We are going to go to executive session, and then we will adjourn after that.